All right, let's call this meeting order here on February 18th. Let's have a little explanation before we go any further from Melissa.
So I had spoken with our chairman about every year in January that we would start the year with an invocation to kick off the year right. And in January, we were getting ready to say the pledge, and I looked at Kyle and said, I forgot for us to say the prayer. And he gave me the don't you dare eyes. And so it's never
gone down the line.
It's never too late to pray. So we're going to do it in February this year instead of January.
Okay. And we've asked Karina to lead us in that. Thank you.
So if we can please stand.
Heavenly Father, we come before you seeking your guidance and wisdom. We ask that you bless the members of this board and our employees with clarity and integrity in all the decisions we make. We ask for your protection over each member of our team and their families. Grant them health, peace, and the assurance of your care. Lord, help us to work together in unity and understanding, always seeking the good of those we serve. May your presence be with us in this meeting and in all that we do. We ask this in your holy name. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. You want to stay standing for the pledge?
Thank you. All right, Mr. Dale will lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. We're going to start a ball game.
Okay.
Are there any public comments at this time?
Mr. Chair, we have no one in the Overton office, and we will not have the camera open because the auditors are on site and working in that room, and so we just didn't want to disrupt them.
Okay, very good. All right. How about a motion to accept the agenda?
I move we accept the agenda as presented.
Okay, we have a motion.
I second.
And Dale, give us a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Approval for the minutes of the previous meeting on January 21st, when we didn't have a prayer.
Full disclosure, I didn't put that in the minutes.
Okay, looking for a motion for approval.
I move we approve the minutes as presented.
Okay. Need a second?
I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second from Randy. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. For the chair's report, we have an outstanding presentation to Mr. Mike Young. Yeah, you're supposed to stand and say how tough it was to get that.
I was. Stop. Can I have you move to in front of the flag so I can take your picture, please?
Oh, man.
Pretty please?
This is going to be real formal.
Absolutely.
You wore a tux. You should have. And you got your suspenders on.
Well, that takes the place of a tux.
You got it upside down.
Turn your certificate over.
Oh, yeah. That's probably pretty important. Huh? Part
of the education.
Can we move the water bottle, please? I'm sorry, we're trying to make this a good picture.
Yeah, I'll take that out.
Okay.
I'll be the next reporter.
Put some makeup on.
Thank you, gentlemen.
You guys are real good.
Perfect.
Real good.
Don't waste it.
I need that back when you're done.
Did you keep the pin?
Well, I don't know.
I don't know either.
Mike, do you hear that?
I need that back.
You got to have that paper back.
You only get to take a picture with it, and then you got to give it back.
Okay. Here you go.
in the mail.
Okay. Does it come with a pen?
It didn't come with one this time.
Oh, okay.
Okay, what about the attorney's report?
I have no report unless anyone has any questions of me at this time. Okay.
Well, let's move to the manager reports.
Okay, let's start with safety first, so Kyle will kick us off.
Okay, the line operations report for the month of January. Safety meeting was held on January 22nd at the Overton Boardroom. We had a special meeting that last month with Las Vegas Metro Police Department coming on and giving our safety meeting. It was See Something, Say Something, which is kind of the precursor to active shooter training. So it was an incredible training that these three professionals delivered to us. Couple hours long, free training. I like to point that part out. It was a great training. They were able to come in-house and teach us all about red flags, what to watch for, how to defuse situations, how to report situations that might come about. Just a very good training overall. And we had good attendance. We had all of the employees of Overton Power, just minus a couple that were able to attend. So incredible meeting we had last month.
Looks pretty dramatic too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it looks like he's like getting after us out there, isn't he? Yeah. No, it was a great meeting, and there were three different presenters that presented, and they did. This is all they do is present and teach, and so it was very well received and energetic, and just a great overall training.
They offered to hand out Prozac at the end of their visit for everybody because it was a heavy conversation. We talked about very disturbing and scary things that the world is facing and what we would do if somebody were to come into try to cause harm inside of our buildings. And that stuff is heavy. You hate to talk about it, but we have to be trained on it and be prepared for it. So I appreciate the work that Kyle went through because it's not easy to get Metro to get out here and get something like that put together.
Worked out very well. We were very excited for that one. Outage report.
How much did they charge for that?
Free. Thank you for tossing that up again. Yeah, free. So,
do you send a nice thank you letter?
Absolutely, yeah. We try and coach all the other utilities around us to take advantage of that. It was, great service that they have for us. Outage report for the month of January. Well, first off, let's talk about the outages we've had recently since these storms. Zilch. We've rode the storm very well. The last two nights have been brutal with the wind and the cold.
Will you put that in the notes? Zilch.
Okay. Zilch. I got it.
I can tell you the linemen have been stressed. Just you weigh when the wind hits that window all night long, and they fear every time the phone goes off that it's another outage can be called in. But we had one minor hiccup up in the Warm Springs area where Christy lives, where it just flickered the light. But otherwise, not a peep, not an issue. So we did very well. Speaks to our maintenance and our inspections programs that we've been working hard at, and we'll continue on with that. So outages for the month of January, we had three unplanned outages, lots of other planned outages. The one unplanned outage, which is line 9 to note, has quite a few minutes associated to it with only 5 customers. That poor animal climbed that pole and cost its life at 1:00 in the morning, but those 5 customers were enjoying the cool, dark night and slept right through it and didn't call it in until 6 a.m. that next morning. So that's why that shows so many minutes associated with that outage. But otherwise, very fortunate, very good month for our
nice
outage.
Nice romantic night, huh?
Yeah, well, I didn't say that part. Yep. Worked out very well. Service installations for the month of January, we had 42 residential hookups. All those, well, vast majority of those are in Dinosaur Substation, which is Pulte Homes, but then otherwise scattered across our system. Wampa Valley had 3 in Whipple Substation and 2 in Overton. For the year, which we're just kicking off the year, we'll keep mentioning this all for the next 12 months, but that's where we're starting off the year at with the year-to-date totals. Projects the crews have been working on for Mesquite area. This one was Painted Hill Substation, which is the one right up here above us. The line crews worked together on this project, both Overton and Mesquite. It was removing some energized 69,000 volt jumpers. You can see on the left, they did it all by stick. It's not a normal process. It's one we are trained to do it periodically, but this one, it's not commonly done. So combined crews so that everybody gets the chance to get hours to it, make sure everybody's prepared for it, and then it worked through it really well. On the far right, you see the pre-switching meeting that they held here at the Mesquite crew room. So there's a lot of switching that went into this job that day, almost an hour's worth of switching out in the field around town that have four or five different groups stationed around to get through that switching. So that level of switching, the teams met for 15 minutes, went through the order, and made sure they had it all dialed, and then headed out to the field and worked all the switching with the sub-ops team, getting it all done.
Kyle, does APCO send us those switching orders?
Not yet, no. And at this level, this is 69 kV. They wouldn't at this level either. It'd be at the 138 and above.
Okay, they're only
at best.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So. Projects for Overton. They're installing a new reclosure. As soon as you come up on top of the mesa from Overton Logandale, as soon as you flatten off right there on the right, we'll install a reclosure there. It's been a want for many of years, but as of recently, the load flow plan, the engineer consultant wrote it out that it was probably a necessity to get done in that area. So Cody and his team have been working hard on this. A lot of good energized 7200 work, getting it all prepared to be able to de-energize it and do it safely. I hope you've seen the Facebook ads, all the stuff going around that the crews have been out teaching the fifth graders at all of the elementary schools, teaching them all about electrical safety, putting our trailer that we built in-house to work. All of our line crews have had the ability to present, whether they're from the lowest groundman all the way to the foreman, have had a chance to be a part of those presentations. We're teaching those kids basic electricity. We're not trying to teach them what high voltage does, but it's what downed wires are and how to avoid that, what to do if they find a downed wire, should they play on the transformers and the switches that are maybe at the bus stops. There's all kinds of things that kids are around the areas and they do every day that maybe they ought not to do, and what can they do to prevent an accident in the future.
That's so terrific.
It was a very good training. We have one more to get through in Bunkerville, which it was supposed to be done yesterday, but adjusted because of the weather. But otherwise, we've done all the elementary schools in our service territories.
I know two of the fifth graders that attended the training. And my boy came home, and I said, "What did you think? Like, what did you think of that presentation?" And he says, "Well, if they were trying to inspire us to become linemen, I say, job well done." And I'm like, that's perfect. But now he's in a big conundrum because he really wants to be a professional football player, but now he kind of wants to be a lineman. And so I've assured him he could probably just be both. Yeah.
Mike Rowe will call him.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. But that's my presentation, unless there's any other comment or questions. Thank you all.
Perfect. All right, down to Randall for engineering services.
Thank you, Lisa. Stephen's going to help me out. Whoa, slow down.
Promise.
So I have one project I want to report on. It's the crossing of the I-50 with the contractor taking the conductors over. Vernon's done a wonderful job sharing information on Facebook. He's taken all of my good photos and put them on Facebook, so you guys have already seen them. So I am not going to share things with him anymore. Keep them for myself. Anyway, but I do have something you haven't seen. I have a video, a one-minute video of the complete project that took 35 minutes to cross, but it's broken down into 1 minute. You're going to get the 1 minute.
Did it in 35 minutes?
Did it in 35 minutes. It was supposed to be done in under 30 minutes. The problem is you'll see they rolled out too much rope ahead of time. They overcalculated how much rope they need to get across. So let's go ahead. This is the crossing. They're going to be pulling the ropes over first. See the guys starting to run across.
Like
football players.
Witches dodge car.
Yeah. Well, Rich, you'll have to tear that seal out one time. There's no such thing as traffic control back in the 70s and 80s. So this next picture, you'll see Metro here in the background holding up traffic on both north and southbound lanes. They have guards on each side, plus in the center, to hold up anything that might fall as they start to pull the conductor over to help protect the vehicle, because they're pulling over the conductor as when the stars cars are going on the freeway. We just have this blocked off for the pulley ropes across. All the ropes are up and they're ready.
Hmm. So how long were the cars stopped then?
About 35 minutes.
Oh, that was the 35.
Yeah, that was the 35 minutes. Thank you, Stephen.
Wow.
And then, Jack, to your delight, I only have one little thing to report on, and it's on WEC compliance. So we made a trip down to Benson, which I don't know how many of you guys have been to Benson, Arizona. It's like Overton with a Walmart. So they do have a Walmart. Anyway, we went down, and we got a day and a half of training by APCO and their team, their compliance team. They've been through several audits. And they shared with us some very important information that will help us here in the next 2 or 3 years. We had CIP training. Stephen attended with us, and they went through all the cyber standards that we have to adhere to. They went through audit training, talked to us about how important it is of the information that we need to provide. So when an auditor comes in, what they're looking for. They gave us information on what they call an RSAW. So an RSAW is a document that auditors use as they're coming in to look at your compliance and what they're actually looking for, specific things they're looking for. And they share that with us to help us as we provide our compliance, that we know exactly what the auditors are looking for, that we can have that. We've been talking about becoming a transmission planner. And we've been kind of kicking that around. And I think what's going to end up, that we're going to be a transmission planner also. We'll take on those responsibilities because I think the pros outweigh the cons. Whereas, as we're our own transmission planner, we don't have to go to any other organization with transmission projects. So any 138 transmission project or above, we can design it, prepare it, and do it ourselves. We don't have to get approval from another entity. And so if we allowed NV Energy or another company to be our transmission planner, everything would have to run to them for their approval. So I think this, even though we're going to pick up some responsibilities as a transmission planner, I don't think it outweighs the pros of us being able to have control of our own designs and our own transmission projects in the future.
That's part of WEC?
That's part of, yeah, that's part of WEC.
Does that really prepare us to generate power ourselves? Is that transmission sound, or is it just through?
It's just like the transmission we're building now, the 138 line that we built. Uh-huh. If we were not our own transmission planner, we would have to get approval from whoever was our transmission planner. We'd have to submit the design, the plans, the engineering to them for their approval. In this case, we'll approve our own projects. Okay. So I think going forward, it's in our best interest. And then we toured their control center. So as a TOP, they have a 24-hour control center down the area. And they man it with, it takes 5 individuals just for 1 control center down there that they have extra in their department just to have them around the control center. And they have 2 different departments that are in there doing that. So they actually have 10 guys in that department to man their control center. So that's what we'd be looking at down the road. If we ever had to do that ourselves, we'd be looking at hiring 5 to 6 extra people at a cost of about $900 to $1 million.
If we did our own WEC components?
Yeah, as we're doing our own. I just don't. Yeah, that's a big bite down the road. I just don't think we want to do that. Anyway, that was a good training, and we're ready to submit a couple more standards for approval from WEC. And in the future, I think we're going to start providing a graph that every maybe quarter we'll share a graph with you to show you where we're at in our progress on our compliance. Mm-hmm. Give you kind of a visual aid for that. And
did you say there was like 200 different ones?
There are 25 major standards that we have to adhere to,
And then within those stand 25, there's multiple requirements within those standards. So it's up to 75 to 100 requirements. And that's all I have. Is there any questions?
And that's by June?
Well, the implementation plan we're working on, it's going to take us to the end of the year. So WEC has asked us to provide an implementation plan, which tells us how we're going to attack each standard and what we're going to have it completed by. And right now, we're looking towards the end of this year to have everything completed. And we're hoping, I believe, that they'll accept that, and hopefully they'll work with us.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Randall. All right, Kevin with substations.
And their control center is, we'd have to upgrade our control center to at least be close to what theirs is, because theirs is pretty decent.
You just wanted the 30 television screens.
Yeah. They have three controllers in there, and there's screens all the way around them, too high, all the way around them. Mm-hmm. And then up on the walls, there's just a big old wall of screens.
With Netflix and
news.
Yeah, you gotta have that. Anyway, my report is, so the Falcon Ridge Distribution Bay update, the new transformer was delivered January 28th, and this is that batch of three that we had for distribution substations ordered. There was a spare transformer sitting there that we've had 20 plus years sitting on that pad. So at the same time, we moved that transformer to Bunkerville and then set this transformer on that pad. Estimated cost of the project is $3.2 million. We've spent $1.8 to date, and then it's expected to be completed in Q4 of 2027.
Will you wire that one in at Bunkerville, or will it just sit there as a spare?
You know, we've talked about wiring it in just to have it energized, if nothing else, because we need to have it energized.
Yeah.
But we'll have to go through a whole process just to make sure it's okay before we do anything.
Is that the one we had a problem with and had it?
It came from Virginia years and years ago, and I'm not sure if we had it rewound or bought it from her or what. But
seems like we had a problem, and we shipped it back to them, and they did a repair on it, and then we got it back.
Yeah, it's been here. It was here. It showed up when I think about 2 years, 3 years maybe is all. So our first transformer came in for the Arrowhead substation. And it came in on February 10th. The second one is scheduled to ship sometime mid-March. Here's some parts and pieces. The cooling fins, that big manifold on the right, all those cooling fins will bolt to that because of the way this is designed. They need to have that great big manifold for all of those fins to kind of set off of the transformer instead of right on it. This is a neat transformer design. It's not unique. They do it all over the place, but it's unique for us. But you can see the bushings come out, the secondary bushings come out on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And so those will go to underground cable straight down in the pad. There's conduits. These will go straight down into the conduits underground. The enclosure on the right it's a huge cabinet. I stood up in it. And it's laying on its side, and I stood up in it. I still have about a foot above my head inside of that thing. So it's a massive cabinet. And it'll bolt under there, and those cables will come up in there and dress through that. And then we'll close the doors to keep it safe. So the neat thing about the way this is designed is everything on the distribution side of that transformer is completely enclosed. So you won't have birds, or hopefully it'll keep out any kind of pests on that substation, so we won't have problems right. Like we do on the others with, you know, raptor protection and stuff like that. So this is the picture on the left is the transformer pads with the building in the background. The picture on the right is the building gone.
Okay.
And it took them about 5 days to take that completely down and take the concrete out and level that out to where it didn't even look like anything was there.
They took the pad out, too, underneath it, huh?
Yep, pad's gone, hauled away, smoothed out. So we have a brand-new, fresh, clean slate to work with at that substation, except for the original substation that's still there. It's still, we can't take it out of service until this one's online. So anyway, we're really making a lot of progress there. It's going to slow up for a little bit, but So this project is estimated to be $8.6 million. So far, we've spent $4 million, and we've got $7 million in POs out there still waiting to be paid with different parts. Transformers, they pay over time. Building gets paid over time. So it looks like it's still shooting towards that $8.6
million. Well, how does it pay over time? I mean, it's not like so much a month. It's when you put in a new piece, or is that how it works?
So the way they do it is when you put in the order, they want 30%. When they hit a certain milestone, they want 30%. When they hit another milestone, okay, they want 30%, and then 10% on delivery, that kind of thing. So it's spread out over.
Yeah.
The transformer took a year
to build. So we finance the building.
The building's going to take a year plus to build. So, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I did a comparison, and it was interesting to me. If we fully built out Raptor substation to a 40 MVA substation, that design would cost us $12 million with today's costs. I went through and I added in today's costs on everything, and it would have cost us $12 million. So there's a savings doing it this way, but it's not... Everything's enclosed. It's not as safe or easy to work on as a full-blown large substation with everything out in the field. It's got its advantages, but it's definitely got its disadvantages too. So this one is good for a small footprint like we have at Arrowhead. The other ones have the advantage where you can take one piece of equipment out at a time without de-energizing everything. So, you know, there's a give and a take. My preferred way is to go everything outdoors. You know, all the reclosers all lined up, all the regulators outside, so you can pick them out and work on one at a time. So, anyway, but I think it's a good fit for a lot of different places.
But the other advantage is we already had the land. Mm-hmm. It was already ours. We didn't have to go through BLM permitting or take down that land. It's not ideal because we lost the warehouse, but we still get to upgrade our substation in the footprint that we already owned. And so there is... It is going to be a different substation than our other substations, but it's still going to work for what we need it to work for in the area that we need it to work. So,
how big are we building it out to? 40 or?
40. This will be a 40.
Okay.
Yeah. We've had a fiber splicer here for the last couple of weeks, and we'll probably have him here for probably another week. A lot of fiber needed to be spliced between that long drive and Raptor, because we tied to Gila, we tied a Dinosaur, we tied a Falcon, we tied a long drive in that long, or Raptor in that long drive substation. So he's probably going to splice over 1,000 fiber while he's here. And a lot of it, he had to fix what we spliced previously. So he's had a pretty good job in front of him, but he's doing a good job. And you can see how clean. He's very meticulous. He does a good job. He likes to make sure his work looks good. So.
And Kevin, he's working in a trailer.
He's working in a trailer or inside of a control house. So,
yeah, like a cargo trailer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pulled behind his pickup out in the dirt.
He's enclosed in this cargo trailer for 8 to 10 hours a day, just listening to books on tape. Just ching, ching, ching. It's a very tedious job, but he enjoys it and he does a fantastic job. The Tortoise substation, if I can make this pointer work. Maybe I can't. So everything on the right-hand side, you can see where the dirt's disturbed. That's the 69 bay. So that is being, it's constructed now. It is being tested and commissioned by the sub-ops crew in Qualys, which has been taking a lot of their time. It's going well from what I understand, and it should be done pretty soon, but it's going to take, it takes about a month to do all of the testing commissioning on that substation. And on the, how would I say it, the top, you see the top row up on there, the 138 bay, we've started to add in the breaker and all of the equipment for that tie-in for the 138 line coming across the Mesa, and they've started that expansion too. Just wanted to update you on that. And this is an overhead shot of that transformer being delivered. That's a pretty neat shot there, I think. So anyway, if you have any questions, That's the end of my presentation.
Thank you, Kevin. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Scott with admin.
Thank you. What's that?
You're doing it, huh? Standing up.
Of course. Got to stand up. You know, I've been thinking about this cybersecurity report. And, you know, I got graphs and charts, and some of it, you know, I probably should have done what I'm about to do this time back when we got Randy on and kind of explained why this is important. So after each slide, I've created a board lens. So what does that look like for the board? When we come and ask for budgeting items, maybe this will be helpful. Maybe it'll help you guys understand why we need what we need. But let's get started. So our cybersecurity training, 89% in attendance. The cybersecurity lessons, social engineering risk. Attackers target people first using deception to gain access. Second thing we learned was early threat detection. Recognizing warning signs early reduces damage. And the last thing we learned was coordinated response. So what is the board lens on that? Why do I report on that? So training participation reflects our frontline defense against cyber risk. High completion rates reduce the likelihood of human-driven incidents and demonstrate organizational accountability. Sustained engagement is critical to lowering overall risk exposure. All right, internal phishing results. In 2025, I put a number over there. We had 6 people click on the phishing emails. So far in 2026, we have 0. And then I clipped a few of the phishing results from years past to see if we're making any kind of improvement. 2019, we had 11. In 2020, we had 10. And then here's another one. In 2022, we had 13. In 2023, we had 7. So why is that important? What is the board lens? Each click represents a potential entry point into the organization. Even a small number of employees engaging with phishing emails can lead to credential compromise, financial loss, or operational disruption. Tracking this metric helps the board assess whether our risk exposure is decreasing and whether awareness efforts are effective. Okay, email and spam. We had 36,000 email, 4,500 of those were spam. Let's take a look back at 2022, where we had an average of about 2,500 email spam. So our spam has doubled in the last 4 years. So email remains the primary external attack vector. The volume of spam reflects the level of attempted exposure to our workforce. While most is filtered, it demonstrates the constant pressure on our defenses and reinforces the importance of layered controls and employee vigilance to prevent a single malicious email from becoming a larger incident. Okay, 2026, this was January of this year, 175,324 firewall blocks. And I went back 5 years, and we had 91,000. So almost double the amount of firewall blocks that we're seeing on our firewall over the last 5 years. These firewall blocks reflect the volume and geographic concentration of attempted external access to our network. While most activity is automatically stopped, it demonstrates persistent global probing of our systems. Monitoring this trend helps ensure our perimeter controls remain effective and that we are appropriately managing exposure to higher risk regions. And I will say that we have default blocks on all of these countries. Stephen, do we let Canada through even?
No, we block Canada.
I think we block every country that outside of the United States is blocked.
What are they typically looking for?
Just a way in.
A way in.
A way in.
And they're... The spam emails, because of AI, you know, just a few short years ago when you got a spam email, there was some broken English in there or there was something that was fairly easy for you to detect instantly. Shauna, our AP clerk, continues to receive emails from me that are angry saying, why haven't you paid this bill? and it has an email chain that looks as though somebody has invoiced us, then told me that it's late, and then I send an email back that apologizes, and then send it on to Shauna and say, get this paid immediately. She knows I wouldn't speak to her that way, so she catches it, but it's incredibly detailed, and there's nothing that makes it look fake. Nothing. And that's AI has helped with that.
It's going to get worse. Server system uptime. We have a very good number here. We report 100% nearly every month. Server uptime reflects the stability and resilience of our core systems. Sustained high availability supports operational continuity and reduces business disruption risks. Maintaining this level of performance demonstrates effective infrastructure management and strengthens overall enterprise reliability. And then we report on this every month as well, data backup and restoration. On January 20th, we went all the way down to zero. Steven and Merlin took those servers offline to do upgrades, and then quickly that came back up to 100%. Backups are our last line of defense against data loss, ransomware, or system failure. Consistent success rates and tested restore capability ensure we can recover quickly and limit operational and financial impact if an incident occurs. And then the EISAC, we still participate in. We had 107 emails come through. The top three security threat patterns were operational disruption risk. Threat actors are increasingly targeting systems that support core operations, exploitable technology exposure, external facing systems, and unpatched vulnerabilities are primary entry points. That is something that Stephen is constantly working on, is getting all of our servers, routers, switches, firewalls patched and up to date. That's a big part of the job. And then human-focused attacks. And so the board lens on that is the EISAC participation strengthens our situational awareness by providing timely threat intelligence across the energy sector. This collaboration improves our ability to anticipate emerging risks, align with industry best practices, and respond proactively to threats that could impact operations. And that's my report. Unless you have questions.
It seems, though, if the number of potential attacks almost doubled.
Yep.
That
the number of probing that we're seeing on the firewall. Yeah.
Right. It's almost doubled. And think of computers becoming even more sophisticated in their operation as far as AI, would it be wise to separate the systems when you have a totally internal system and a totally external?
That is absolutely what we're working toward.
Okay.
Separating our core network with our sub-network and making them completely separate networks.
Outside is a totally different.
Correct.
That's okay.
Yep.
Because it seems almost impossible. I mean, the numbers are going up so fast.
Yeah, and we've
increased. And more sophisticated in their attacks.
And we've increased our firewall count from 2 to, I think, we have 7 firewalls now in the system. So that's another thing that we're increasing as well.
Yeah.
Wow. With the completion of the line across the Mesa, we'll have our own fiber.
We will.
Will that upgrade, will we be able to use that? And
that'll take us out of Moapa Valley Telephone and Rio or Cascade Access, Rio Virgin.
We won't be using their T1s.
So that'll be all internal network, which will be extremely helpful.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Great report. Thank you, Scott. All right, finances with Jonathan.
All righty. As Lisa said, we have our financial auditors in-house on-site. They were here yesterday and today. And they are doing our financial audit, and they're planning to report that, and we're going to present that next board meeting on March 25th in the Overton office. And then last week, Vernon and I attended the Colorado River Commission meeting, and the big topic of discussion was the renewal of the Parker Davis contract, which expires in September of this year, 2026, and we submitted for some increased allocation. It was favorable for us. They presented and proposed the allocations to the entities, So we were receiving a 8% allocation from the Parker Davis project, and now we've been increased to a 14%. However, we were receiving quite a bit of layoff from the other entities that weren't using their allocation. And as we looked to see if the layoff was more than the increase, it appeared that the layoff that we were receiving, at least last year, was more than what the layoff or what the increased allocation was. So I know it's all, you know, in the future and forecasting and all that, but it appears that we're going to be receiving a little bit less in our allocation overall because of layoffs.
No more layoffs.
So what they did with the layoff, they spread that layoff out. That's why we had an increased allocation, and they spread it out amongst the entities that were applying. So they allowed some new folks to come in, new entities, and then they increased the other ones that were there. So.
And that's 27. It's up in 27, not 26.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought it was in 26.
But. So whenever there is a long-term hydro contract up for availability, there is people clamoring to get that. And so we anticipated that we would see a reduction. I thought we would see a far greater reduction. I know that they took on two of our neighboring entities, Lincoln County Power District and the City of Boulder City, both got allocations. But they did some rewinding at one of the dams that increased its output, and they spread out that layoff. Now, the danger with the layoff was that, you guys remember, there was a time that we didn't know if we were going to get it month to month. And then finally, we convinced them to at least allocate it for the year. And then they gave us a two-year block that they said, okay, we're certain that those entities are not going to come back on. Now, with this renewal, we're guaranteed to get that, because that's always just been industries that couldn't take their allocation that they said, well, we'll give it to you instead. But it's never genuinely been ours. And now, with this contract, it will be ours going forward. Thank you, Jonathan.
Yeah. So beginning with our financial report, on the column D, starting on line one, we had $4.7 million in revenues, which was about a little less than what we budgeted there. So it's easy to see the month comparison because we're just in January, and that was weather-driven. And then our cost of purchase power on line three there, so that includes, it's $3.3 million. The budget was $3.2 million. And we have three out of the five invoices, our estimates there, we've estimated high. Also, we have our EIM charges have been high in the last quarter of 2025. And we've been talking with Tenasca to determine how we can reduce those. But ever since the solar has come on in full-fledged, we've kind of had increased EIM charges, and so we're working on figuring out how to reduce those. So again, that estimate is then in there with the increased EIM charges. So estimates in there. And then our line 20, total cost of service, $4.9 million, just above where we were budgeting. And then our non-operating margins, I'm sorry, our interest received on investments, $26,000, and then we had a net loss of $170,000 for January. We were projected to have a net loss of around $50,000, and again, that number's most likely going to change because of the high estimates of our power costs. And then also there was a timing issue with our payroll that increased our cost in the month of January. We had three payrolls, which we were paid every 2 weeks. And so there's 2 years. We have 26 pay periods instead of 24. And so there's 2 months that we have out of the year that we have three payrolls. And when we do our budgeting and forecasting, those 2 months are spread out evenly. And so when they hit in the month that it's on there, then that increased payroll cost is in there. So that's also an increase of our reason why our margins were...
Well, I noticed we're doing much better than we did last year as far as losses for this period.
Yes, sir. About almost 400,000.
378,000. Yeah, no, much better, but still it is a little worrisome because we did put a big rate increase, not big, but a rate increase in.
Right.
And still we're in the hole. It's
right.
Well, we anticipated being in a hole for the first probably 10 years. Maybe longer that I worked here.
Oh.
Our finances were always cyclical. We always had a loss in the first 2 months.
Okay.
Then we built through the shoulder months. We peaked in the summer, and then we went down and we had a loss at the end of the year. That's the way that our finances always trended. As we got new power contract, that leveled out so that we didn't see those huge swings. We're back with tighter margins to seeing that. Now, One other piece that I want to point out is in January was the first month that we served the two backfeed solar projects out on the Moapa Band of Paiute's land. And so those, the EIM, the energy imbalance market bills from NV Energy have been estimated and are included in that, as well as the power cost for those. And so there's multiple things that have all happened right here early in January, and my response is don't panic because we have a $100,000 difference than what we budgeted. We have things that are estimates that we're working through that we will get cleaned up, and Jonathan will report to you guys next month once we get all of that billing in, what was the true number for January.
Yeah, because I noticed a little bit later here our energy cost is the same as it was last year. No different. And yet we've got the two solar projects plus, or the one big solar that feeds us was going to reduce. And also the two new ones, we have no cost, we just get money from, yet our power costs end up to be the same as last year.
No, we do have cost. We do have cost. We are purchasing that energy for that backfeed, and those are at a different rate than what we're charging our customers, but it's blended on his sheet as all together. And so Jonathan will talk about that when we get to that page and it's easier to see. Okay. But our cost will be reduced because
it
our solar is,
yet.
It doesn't show because we have two additional contracts now that are a different rate. And so, I think that for future reports, he'll probably break that out for you so that you see what are we charging for those flow through costs.
Yeah. Okay.
And we'll talk about it. What we're reporting actually changed a little bit because we had to make some adjustments to this. So, and also there were several days in January that we weren't receiving any solar energy, and so it's not. It makes a difference. It's not a huge impact, but
if they don't generate, aren't they supposed to give us some kind of pay for some of our losses? Contract?
Yes. So the way that works is that you have a biannual true-up. So it's never day for day. If they're off for 3 days, they had equipment failure, that their plant was off for 3 or 4 days, they don't pay us immediately for us to recoup that. But what they say is over this period, so it's, like I said, biannually because there's a winter and a summer, and that period, those 6 months, what did they say that they would sell to us? If it's less than that, we get a refund. If it's more than that, okay.
Okay.
But so we will see that, but it will never be trued up in the month that it's happening.
Okay, on the balance sheet, our net utility plant on line 5 there on the left of the asset side is $165 million. And then we have our patronage capital on line 8, our line 15 cash and our investments in line 18, material and inventory on line 23, and all contribute to our total asset value of $195 million for January 2026. So then on our equity side, line 36 on the right, our total equity is $132 million. And we have our long-term debt of $47 million, accounts payable, and then our total liabilities of $195 million. So our asset balance sheet continues to grow. Our modified debt service coverage, so this is with estimates throughout the end of the year, 1.87 is what we are anticipating, and we're on track to do that with being in January. The next ratio is year to date. Oh, I'm sorry, no. The next ratio, equity is a percentage of assets, we're at 68%. Our next ratio is a year to date or times interest earned ratio, so we're actually way below a negative because we had a loss, so our margins are reflected there. So
that's not something, really not something you really, when you only have 1 month, it hardly counts.
Right.
Because I think our borrowing rate is evaluated by our lender by the tier two, so that's a ratio you can pay back, right?
Right, yeah.
And did you pull that from the beginning of 2025 because we haven't closed 25?
No, it's just because it's in.
So I think I think we'll update that. We'll update that next month. I think there's it's not a negative. I think that it's just that the report was not pulled through from 2025 because we haven't closed it yet. So I think that's an erroneous error. That's an erroneous number.
Loan guarantee, it has to be above 125,
doesn't it, or something? Not for tier. We're beholden to debt service coverage. So this is the ability to repay just the interest on your debt. But I know we're not at a negative. It's just the report was pulled.
Yeah, it seems strange when you only have 1 month.
Yeah.
It almost ought to be a rolling 12-month.
It's just that he needed to pull the Form 7 from January of 25.
So I'll fix that. Sorry, my bad, guys. So the next one, January, our cash right there in the middle in bold is where ending cash was, $6.799 million. And then in our investment account, down there at the bottom right, Morton, $6.3 million, and then $4.3 in our Goldman account. And then the assets are detailed are in the pie chart and the bar graph by security type and duration in our Morton account there. And as of January 31st, OPD had a total of 19,203 customers. Mm-hmm. So it was an increase of 24 from December. Connection fees were valued at $34,000 in January, which is fairly consistent for past Januaries. Current billing arrangements, also this is historically the same, we're at $88,315 for January for our residential customers and then $995 for our commercial customers. Our roundup program, so again, we submitted those checks to the high schools in January or in December, and so we started over. So those are the values there. Starting with
no level. Come on, Rich. We don't play favorite.
Step it up, Pirates.
With the ball game and what in Virgin Mountain, not in the Grand Valley. So efforts are unequal.
So then our loans with CFC, is the breakdown here of the detail. Our next loan payment is due March 31st for $1.4 million. And our total outstanding loans there at the bottom, $47 million. And our average with discounts is at 3.7. And then here's the breakdown of our revenue by customer class. And with the totals here at the bottom, what you were referring to earlier, Mike, is this changed a little bit because at the time when we submitted the reports, we didn't actually have the revenues from the two new customers for the backfeed solar. And so our monthly, actually, I guess that would affect the revenue. But our monthly cost, actually, we didn't have the KWH in there. So our KWH increased from the reports that we sent out earlier. So
our KWH's purchased has increased. So our average there is monthly cost average has gone down. So we didn't have those figured in at that time on the prior one.
That's the one that was emailed to us.
Yeah.
Or that you posted online.
Okay, yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
So I'll just remind you guys that for those two backfeed customers, or I should call them station power customers, we do not give them the benefit of our legacy hydro or our solar rate. They have a straight rate that comes from our market. So one of them is charged the market rate that we currently are paying for all of our customers. And then the other customer had to get its own special rate that is significantly higher. Because, yes, because they were outside of our contractual of 1.5 megawatts. And so that's why when all of that is blended together, it still shows that our monthly cost is at $84.60 a megawatt, and we know that our market rate right now is $87.70. So it's, but it's blending those two higher costs with that.
Yeah, but what you sent out actually said 0.90.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, 0.9.
Yes.
And, okay, so that's much better. Finally seeing some results of those, forcing our costs down.
Mm-hmm. And that concludes my presentation, unless you have any other questions.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you. All right.
I got it.
I have had, you. That's what my brain looks like every night when I try to go to sleep.
Man, we better get somebody else.
All right. I might need some of that Prozac that the cops offered us. I have had a busy month since I saw you guys last. I have attended a number of meetings, and I'll give you the high points on just a few things on here. First, I want to let you guys know that we hired Crystal Tobler as a customer service representative in our Overton office. Crystal is from the Moapa Valley, and she just started yesterday. So we are thrilled to have her added to our team. I'm going to talk to you about some of the government and community advocacy meetings that I've been attending. At the end of last month, I went there were members of the city of Mesquite that were holding a meeting on tourism, and they had invited Congressman Horsford to attend, and his staff reached out to Vernon and asked if we would be willing to attend that meeting as well. So I was thrilled that we got to go. That was a great meeting for a couple of reasons. One, as we went around the room, and there were about 25 people who all got to talk about what it was that they needed from the federal level for this community, I got to talk about that we need permitting reform. And one of the things that happened for us is that we had a small piece of a right-of-way that was tied up in the BLM for about 3 years that we could not get wrapped up. And so I was able to tell the congressman that we did what my grandma always said, and we wrote a letter to our congressman, and we told him that we were struggling with this. We talked with his staff. He then reached out to the BLM. We waited about, I think, a month and a half. We still didn't hear anything back. We called him. He made a call, and 2 weeks later, we had our permit. And so I was able to thank him in person in that room for making that happen. Also, his staff member Ishmael that helped us was there, and so he got kudos in front of his boss. And so guess who Ishmael's favorite constituent is now in Nevada? So that was the first thing that went well. I also got to talk about the fact that for all of the growth that people in that room were hoping to have, every single one of them requires power. And for us to provide power for the growth that they're wanting in Mesquite requires infrastructure. And so we talked through that. And then afterwards, the congressman had a short meeting in Moapa Valley, and Vernon was able to attend that meeting. So he got a double dose of OOPD5 on that day. Since that meeting, we've had follow-up meetings with him on the 2027 appropriations, what that looks like, what that process for application is, as well as future grant funding that they could help us with. And then one of his staff members, Carlos, has reached out to us for a site visit from the congressman. And so I'm really proud of Jack. You remember that we had many years that even if we had a check, we could barely get the congressman to visit with us.
And you certainly wouldn't see a picture like that.
And now, now we're at the point that when he's going to be in town, he's reaching out to us to see if we can attend those meetings. And so I'm very proud of the work that we're doing with his staff.
You should be.
Thank you.
That is incredible.
Thank you.
And we met with the senators, too, at the meeting down in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is really upping the ante for us to perhaps get some government help for free.
Yes. Knock on wood, say our prayers and eat our vitamins, Mr. Young. We're going to get some appropriations. Okay. So, yesterday, Vernon and I attended a meeting with Toby Urich. You see Toby in the top right back corner there in this picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Toby was our representative in the assembly, and he vacated that seat earlier in 2025. And because they had a special session, his seat was then filled. And so his seat was filled with the gentleman on the front left. His name is Jason. Oh, Vernon.
Patchett.
Thank you. Patchett. I was going to say Pritchard, and I'm like, I know that's not right. Jason Patchett. And so he had a meeting with community leaders in Moapa Valley yesterday and was introduced by with Toby. And so we got to spend some time and talk with him. And Vernon and I talked with him about the need for rural representation. And one of the points that I made to him was that it is very easy when you get into the machine that is the legislature to have 20 lobbyists from NV Energy in your face at all times. And to remember that as a rural community, all of the rural utilities have one lobbyist. And so when you have questions or you believe that something is going to affect our industry, we hope that as our representative, you choose to reach out to us or seek counsel from us as well. And so we had a great visit with him. The other thing that I asked him to be mindful of was future discussions on tax abatements. One of the things that we are seeing in the state is that for growth opportunities with, say, a data center, they receive a tax abatement. Well, where do they want to put the data centers or the solar fields? They want to put them in rural communities because the land is cheaper and there's more of it. But then they give a tax abatement. So then what does the rural community that has that development in it get? Not much. And so I ask him to be mindful of when those discussions happen, that you're thinking through the lens of the people who are living in those rural communities and surrounded by that infrastructure. Toby will continue to serve as a policy advisor for the governor. And so, and we've had a great relationship with Toby. He's a he has been really wonderful for us. And so I told him that we would appreciate if he would stay in touch with us, and absolutely he will. So I'm looking forward to that. Let me see, what did I have next? So one of the Congressional Western Caucus is one of the largest caucuses in the nation. It started out with just the West, but now there are representatives from all across the nation. And the reason that I am keyed in on this specific caucus is they have been really instrumental in education and the pushing for the need for the SPEED Act, which is the permitting reform act that that we need. They've also pushed for EPA regulations to stop the closure of coal-fired plants, and they've pushed for wildfire mitigations, the Help Save Our Forest Act. So the president, or I think he's called the president, or the chair of that caucus was Doug LaMalfa, and he is from Northern California. In late 2025, he passed away unexpectedly. And so just 2 weeks ago, they announced that the chair for this caucus is Celeste Malloy from Utah. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that is interesting about Celeste is that she was raised in HICO. She has a wonderful, she's from Southern Utah, but was raised in HICO. And she has a very good working relationship with our neighbors at UREC-A. So Vernon and I are going to reach out to her and congratulate her on her new role and start working to build that relationship with her. But on that note, CRETA just sent a letter of support to both Representative Malloy and then Senator Mike Lee out of Utah, because they are pushing for legislation that would authorize a feasibility study for, I've got to see how they called it. I tried to think of a polite way to say it, and I'm like, no, I better just say what they say, because selective withdrawal system from Glen Canyon Dam. So you know how I feel about the Bureau of Reclamation's studies that they do with low-flow experiments, where they are bypassing hydropower to send cold water to give all of the bass a cold shower so that they don't spawn and eat the humpback chub in the Colorado River. That lunacy, I shouldn't say on record, but good hell. that lunacy has cost WAPA in buying replacement power $25 million over the process. That $25 million is coming from the Basin Fund, which is from our rates that we pay. The Basin Fund is set up to pay for the maintenance and operations of all of the dams in the Crisp area. But what's happening is it's being used to buy excess power because hydro is getting bypassed for these low high-flow experiments. So both of these representatives from Utah are putting together legislation saying we need to find an alternative. We need to look for an alternative to those. And so CRETA has wrote a letter of support, and we also are going to write a letter of support to both of those representatives, and that will give us one more thing to visit with Ms. Malloy about in the near future. While we're talking about hydropower, so the Bureau of Reclamation did this press release on the 13th, and I won't read you the entire thing, but there's a couple of things that we need to say. The hydrology on the Colorado River is grim. We see that. The snowpack is far below normal. The water year inflow is now estimated at just 52% of average. But what I'll point you to is in the second paragraph it says, the basin's poor hydrological outlook highlights the necessity for collaboration as the basin states work on developing the next set of operating guidelines for the Colorado River system. So this came out on the 13th. These are the press releases that came from the basin states also on the 13th. So what we have is seven states that have been working together that says what is going to happen on the Colorado River after 2026. How is the river going to be operated, and what rules are going to be imposed on that water flow? And they have had, they had a time frame that they were given to come up with a solution, and none of the states could, they couldn't come to agreement. And so here we are, and the time came on the 13th, no agreement. Once again, second time that they failed to come to an agreement. So the upper basin states sent out a short thing that says, we remain committed to working together. But I do want to read you the southern basin states because I got a kick out of this. So this is from Governor Newsom, Hobbs, and Lombardo. The federal deadline for a consensus agreement on managing the Colorado River after 2026 is passing for a second time without resolution. The stakes couldn't be higher for our lower basin states of Arizona, California, and Nevada. Approximately 75% of the population, employment, and agricultural crops sales of the Colorado River Basin are in our states. This also includes 25 of the 30 sovereign tribal nations that live within the basin. The Colorado River is essential to our communities and economies, and our states have conserved large volumes of water in recent years to stabilize the basin's water supply for years to come. To secure a seven-state agreement for post-2026 management of the river, Arizona has offered to reduce the Colorado River allocation by 27%, California by 10%, and Nevada by nearly 17%. Our stance remains firm and fair. All seven basin states must share in the responsibility of conservation. Our shared success hinges on compromise, and we have offered significant flexibility, allowing states without robust conservation programs time to gradually develop these programs in ways that work in each state. Our future management of the Colorado River must be built on a foundation of shared contribution and innovation, with all Colorado River water users stretching to conserve water. Our commitment to a collaborative outcome is unwavering, and we will continue to pursue a negotiated resolution while protecting our water users. I don't know about you, but I don't see them coming to a consensus anytime soon after reading their press releases. So what do we do going forward? Because there has been no agreement, and it doesn't appear as though there's going to be an agreement. The Southern Basin is saying the Upper Basin has got to start conserving water. And the Upper Basin is saying no, essentially. Yes.
They want more.
So where does that leave the river? Right now, I think it was about a week and a half ago, I listened to the Bureau of Rec's presentation on the management of the river. And what they said was they had three alternatives of how this would go. What I hate to say, but what I anticipate is they're going to have to come up with a plan. They have to agree to, they have to put forward something, and then what does it have, then what ends up happening? Then the states sue the federal government because they don't agree with the plan, and it stands in litigation for even longer. That's what I see happening. Nobody wins in that situation, but it costs all of us money, but the water has to be managed, so... CRETA is following this very closely and working really hard. One of the things that is of detriment to this is I reported to you guys that Leslie from CRETA, their executive director, has announced her retirement. It's not just the loss of her incredible institutional knowledge. She's so well respected. Everywhere where there is hydropower, I mean, she is the person. And so finding her replacement and having that person hit the ground running, I don't think is going to be easy. CRETA has retained NRECA for their executive search. And just as a side anecdote, our friend Dave Luttrell is leading that executive search. And so I've responded to the couple of surveys that they've done, and I'll let you guys know as that goes. The other thing that we do have going for us is that Colorado River Commission, Gail Bates serves on CRETA, and she's another incredibly well-respected person in the hydropower world. And so she represents Colorado River Commission in CRETA, but then we're a customer of both. We're a customer of Colorado River Commission. So we still have very good representation, and I'm in close contact with them about this. But the glaringly obvious that we have to say is our hydropower is dwindling, and it will continue to dwindle. I mean, we're past the point of praying for rain and hoping that snowpack is going to save us. What we have to do is have conservation upriver, and then hope that we can come to some kind of agreement that enough water flows that we still continue to receive some hydropower. So I'll let you know as that goes. The other, let me see if I, Jack and I went to NREA in Boulder City last week, and one of the guest speakers there was Eric Witkowski from CRC. So we're definitely on a hydropower theme this month. But one of the things that Eric gave us an update was on the Help Hoover Dam Act. So there's $50 million that the Bureau of Reclamation has erroneously taken for post-retirement benefits that has been already taken, has been taken from fees, but has already been taken from those employees. And so this money has been stuck in a fund at the federal government that the Bureau of Reclamation has collected, but then says they do not have the authority to release and use. So the short story of all of this is they put together legislation to try to, it literally takes an act of Congress to get that money released. They did not get it the first time. They now have put it forward again. Governor Lombardo has sent a letter of support to the Secretary of the Interior. This legislation has now passed out of the House in September, and Susie Lee and Catherine Cortez Masto have both put together to move it to Congress. So it's making its way through the process right now. NREA is supporting it. When we were at the meeting, Jack and I showed our support to CRC and said that we would be willing to give support any way that we could. So we're following that closely. The other thing that CRC wanted to update us on was that they're also trying to get IIJA grant funding, and they're hoping to get about $76 million in grant funding. Both of those, if they were to get them, they plan to use to convert Hoover to Whitehead turbines. And so what happens is if we hit Deadpool at 1035 at Meade, we lose over 70% of the capacity coming out of Hoover. So what's left that can produce, it just has to run. And so you don't just lose how much energy you're producing, you also lose all of that ramping ability. So what happens is right now you can optimize that hydro and say, we want that hydro running full bore as solar is ramping on. Or at the end of the day, when the batteries and solar are ramping off, you can fill those hours with hydro. Without Whitehead turbines just running the way that they are, it's just running through. You don't get any of that optimization. So the Whitehead turbines will help with both. We are very hopeful that they will get this funds and be able to retrofit those turbines. But we'll support them any way we can. And we have already sent a letter of support to both Susie Lee and Catherine Cortez Masto for them pushing this in our state. The other person that we met with at NREA was Brian Scroggins. And Jack, I want you to help if I don't say all of this, if you heard something different than what I heard. Brian is from the Governor's Office of Agency for Nuclear Projects. And my take from him was that he said multiple times he's open to talk to anybody, he's willing to hear anybody's opinion, but his major point was there is no major repository anywhere in the U.S. for spent nuclear fuel. That everybody that has spent nuclear fuel has them cask in small areas where their project is, but there's no major repository. And my take on that was, don't bring up Yucca Mountain. Nevada's not wanting that, and we don't want to bring up nuclear because of that. Now, I don't know that that's 100% because he said he was very open to talking about it, but I think in our state we have a long way to go with getting nuclear here. So one thing, though, that I did think was interesting, he noted that there's a company called Valor Atomics that say that they are going to have an SMR online in 2026 in Utah. And so when I did a little bit of research on that, that is going to be used to power a data center. But as more states become open to it and we see things going on around us, it may start opening the minds of the voters in the state of Nevada, and we may see some growth at some point that we could add some nuclear to our portfolio. I don't think it's going to happen quick, but it could happen. So, okay, I got just two more things. I want to just touch on our trip to APCO for compliance for WEC. The way that we're handling this WEC compliance right now is twice a month we are having a call with the management staff of APCO. And they are leading us through this. This is their attorney, the head of their control room. We have their IT head. The top figures of this entity are sitting down and walking us through all of this. And then once a month, we have a call with Lincoln County, APCO, and us, and WEC. And so we give WEC an update of where we're at on our projects, what we've been doing. Randall said that we are going to send them our implementation plan. This is what does an implementation plan entail. And we're going to tell WEC, this is what we think is going to take us to become compliant, and we're going to ask for an extension because this is such a high-level overview. But what I want to say is this is a Herculean task. That what our staff has been working on is incredible. It takes so much time to set up these standards, to define a standard owner, to define who's going to be the subject matter expert, and then all of the work and the evidence that are required to compile just to prepare for an audit it's absolutely incredible. So we left APCO, first off, thanking the Lord that we had APCO to help us through this process. But also, I left there so proud because our staff is so incredible. They were so impressive in those meetings. They know what they're talking about. They know their job. It's just a matter of putting together a process so that they could prove it out the way WEC wants it proved. And so when we left there, I think everybody's head was swimming. But I'll leave you with this. We are capable of this. It is going to cost us far more money than I want it to cost us. And it is going to cost us heartache and time and some stress, guaranteed. But our team is capable of doing this. It is going to be incredibly hard, but we can get it rolled out. And when we do, I truly believe we will be better. It's bringing more professionalism to some of our communications. It's bringing more professionalism to the access that we allow people to have to our substations, to our buildings. There's a lot of good that will come from this. There's a lot of work, but I think that we will be better for it. So I just want to say that the team has done an incredible job. Randall is leading that out. And they asked me, we were about an hour and a half into our conversation on the first day, and they said, how do you feel? And I said, I feel like I want to go get drunk. this is unbelievable. And nobody offered to go with me, so I just stayed and listened to them do all of the work. But our team did a very, very good job, and Randall will continue to update you on how this process goes. The last thing that I have for you, Jonathan mentioned that we have the auditors on site. Every one of you should have received an email from our auditor with a fraud statement that that you fill out and return. If you did not get the email, Becky has a paper copy of the fraud statement that she's given to you. If you will please fill that out and then return it, Becky will put it in an envelope and return it to the auditor. But it's imperative that each of you sign and fill out that fraud statement so that the auditor can put that in, get that to rest in March.
Was that just recently? I thought it was a couple of months ago.
It was.
We received
but you didn't tell me.
I don't know. Do you know when they sent it out?
I got one last week.
Oh, yeah. And we had quite a few employees because it goes to all the board and then at random employees. And we had quite a few employees calling us and asking us.
Well, everybody thinks it's a junk email, right?
It's all a spam junk email.
So if you didn't get it, we have a paper copy that you can fill out and turn in.
Could you just check and see if I sent mine?
You didn't.
I didn't. Okay.
Just fill out paper, Rich.
I'll just copy my last. No, I won't.
We're on record, yeah. Richard Jones. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. The beat goes on. Jay, equity management presentation by Master Rural Utilities Cooperative Finance Corporation, CFC. This is discussion only.
Yes. So we have our RVP, Kirk Collier from CFC. I asked him to come in and talk with you guys about equity management tonight. And Kirk, I want you to introduce yourself and give a little bit of your background so that understand that you're not just a CFC guy.
I'm not just a CFC guy. I mean, you guys are sitting in lazy boys, too. If y'all want to stand up and stretch for a minute, I don't want anybody going to sleep in the presentation. I'm Kirk Collier. I've been with CFC for about a year and a half now. Thank you.
Down advances it.
Down advances it, okay. And I've got my water bottle here. I've had dinner with a few of you gentlemen and ladies over the past year and a half, but I guess my background is well, we're going to back up a little bit more. I've been married 33 years, married to, my wife is Michelle. She was a high school Spanish teacher. Now she's retired, stays at home. We've just moved to Woodward, Oklahoma. If you've seen the fires yesterday, the past day or two, that's where we are. Oh. So keep them in your prayers. The fire came within about 100 yards of our new house.
Our
new house to us. It's not new. But so Michelle was calling me, we were texting, calling all the way, all the way here yesterday. And they evacuated our neighborhood. My grandkids are there too, so that's why I'm in Woodward. It's not because I just love Oklahoma. It's because I love my grandkids, and so we're there for them. That's why she's retired, to help them out. But I guess my background, I'm Ag Eco degree, master's in stats and finance, and worked at a hedge fund for about 15 years. And the hedge fund manager decided to retire, and I didn't want to go to Houston, Austin, New York, California. So I got a job as a CFO at a co-op. Imagine that, from hedge fund to a co-op. Worked there for about 6 years in Tri-County Electric in Hooker, Oklahoma. You gotta have to embrace the name of the town. If you guys want some t-shirts, I can get you a few t-shirts to pass it out, to your significant others if you want. But did that for 6 years and got kind of bored, honestly, because, unfortunately, co-ops are changing faster now than they were back then. But, coming from a hedge fund to a co-op, the ship moves very slow, honestly. So, CFC asked me if I'd like to, I got an opportunity to get on board with CFC. I worked with their FT&A group. I've got background in, I was over IT at the co-op in accounting and member services. So, I've got a lot of programming background. Done that, been there, done that, and I was with the FT&A group at CFC for about about 6 months. Then they called me and said, "Hey, I think you'd make a great RVP." What's that entail? It entails going to co-ops. The FT&A group does Budget Pro, Compass, all that stuff, all the models. We do that. We program those, but they thought I would make a good RVP. So here I am today, your RVP here in Nevada. I've got a son that lives in Reno. He's over the fly fishing department in Shields, so he's broke. But thank goodness he married up a little bit. But his wife works for NV Energy, I'm sorry.
But she's always, tell us that.
Yeah, sorry. She's a sweet, sweet, sweet girl, but she's always stressed because she's over the fire mitigation. She's the public relations when there's a fire. Anything happens on that site, she's in front of the camera and getting yelled at by members. Mm-hmm. So that's her life. But I'm here today to talk to you, to the board and the staff in here about equity management. And I'm going to run through some slides real quick. At the end, I'm going to start writing. And I've got a cheat sheet here. I showed it at the back. I feel like I'm in college. I wrote some notes down, where you can write as much as you can on an index card. So I'm going to use the index card, kind of cheat a little bit. But down is forward. So there's our disclaimer. So I think I'll stand.
I didn't get to read through that.
I'm going to yell back here. No. Yeah, would you please read the disclaimer first? Bottom line, I'm not here to convince you what your appropriate equity level should be at your cooperative. You're the board. Every board has their differences. I've seen co-ops with 80% equity. I've seen co-ops with 22% equity or 18% equity.
Negative.
Yeah. So it all depends on the why. Why is your equity the way it is? That's the big question. And I'm here to help you understand why equity is important at your co-op. We're going to go through some KRTAs and recognize the drivers that impact your equity and the importance of you guys setting smart equity policy here in the boardroom, because it makes a difference. This is a, I mean, this, How long has Overton been in business?
90 years.
90 years, so it matters. You're in here for the long haul. So, what does equity mean to you at home? You can answer these questions too out loud if you want.
No mortgage.
No mortgage. You know what I did? I sold my barn dominium in Hooker, Oklahoma. Sorry, I did that in Oklahoma very fast. At least I had it faster than I did. And I bought a smaller house in Woodward, paid off the mortgage. Loved it. That's why my wife, that's why she's retired. We paid it off. But at home, we're for profit, aren't we? I mean, I love you guys. I love hanging out here in Mesquite, Nevada, but they pay me to do this too. You know, I've got to make some money. I'm not going to live forever, probably. I doubt it. I'm already got arthritis in one knee and a finger. I'm aging rapidly. And at home, my house only serves my wife and I. We've got no kids at home anymore. Thank goodness. They're both out. So, my personal attitude toward debt, we celebrate it, don't we? When you pay off your mortgage, man, I told my dad that about 3 months ago. I said, Dad, we got no home mortgage. He was, man, that's a good thing. Proud of you. Why? Because it's a big deal to not have a mortgage. So I paid it off. We strive to be debt-free. The Dave Ramsey approach. I remember having the envelopes for my kids. Spend, save, and give. They're always empty. All of them. Usually empty. But we did the Dave Ramsey thing. But why? Why do I want to be debt free? Why do you want to be debt free at home?
You can be your own boss.
Yeah. It gives you freedom, doesn't it? Some latitude in life. You know, I could probably go flip burgers and be just fine for a while. I think. So it's independence. We get independence out of that. Reduce cost. Our owner, you know, it's mine. I did that. It's pride. That's kind of how we grew up in the West, in the Southwest especially. Co-ops are a little bit different. You guys have been around for 90 years. This slide says 85 years plus. They're capital intensive. You guys have seen the, I mean, what's it? You're spending how much on substation improvement?
A lot.
A lot? You're not giving that somebody out of plastic and all made in China. It's pretty expensive stuff. You got to continue to invest in infrastructure. Things change all the time. Sometimes they fall down. I was at a co-op where 40% of the system fell down in 2 months. Ice storm and snowstorm. Mm-hmm. Mother Nature finds your weaknesses. It's high cost. Things aren't cheap. And appropriate to spread the cost over the asset's useful life. It's called, in accounting, the matching principle. You know, you tend to match the life of the asset with the cost. They have long, useful lives. And it's fairness. Okay, if you pay cash today for the substation, who pays for that?
Today's customer.
There you go. Today's customer. You pay for it today. And I would venture to guess you're not going to all of. I'm not going to live another 90 years, or another 30 years probably. Maybe if I'm lucky, 55. I'll be 85. We'll see if the vitamins are working. Because I'm not working out every day. So, it's fairness, really. So, if you look at this chart, this is long-term assets, total assets, percentage. G&Ts and distribution co-ops are second and third only to real estate. You know, 86% of distribution co-ops assets are long-term, aren't they? Whereas financials, you have a computer, you change it every 5 years probably. So, they're very capital intensive. Fixed charges, depreciation, interest can make up 20 to 30% of total operating cost of service. Net utility plant can make up 70 to 80% of total assets. Debt can make up 50 to 70% of total liabilities, depending on how much debt you have. So why can a co-op take on so much debt?
That's how you spread the cost.
You math? True, but why? I mean, it's a simple answer. It really is. A constant cash flow. People don't really have an option to have electricity. I don't want electricity. I'm not going to buy that stuff. I'd rather have my iPhone. Well, you know, you don't really have a choice. People need it. So they're going to make sure that electric bill usually gets paid every month. So, cooperatives need a balance between debt and equity to fund capital investment rates that maximize their value to their members. So, you got the debt side, generally sourced from CFC, and we put in other lenders. We're not going to name them by name, but we did say there's other lenders out there.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Richard. Come on now.
No, I'm just kidding.
turn your tank down now. Or is sourced from excess revenues over expenses, your margins, by your members. So, what is equity and capital? It's funds invested by members. Membership fees, patronage capital, y'all do have margins. That's really what that is. Your overall margins, your current year operating margins. Kayak, contributions in native construction. And that's one, when I first came to the co-op world, they kept saying kayak. But what in the world is, that's a boat, isn't it? That's something you go down the river in, a kayak. But yeah, co-ops have multiple acronyms I had to learn when I came into this world. Other funds, capital credits. Y'all don't really get a whole lot of capital credits from anybody. A lot of other co-ops do. It's amazing. The co-op I was at, we would get about anywhere from $3 to $8 million a year allocation from our G&T because we owned the G&T. It was a big deal. Cost of equity, opportunity cost to our members. That's what equity capital is. It's what are we charging our members to use their money today to build the projects today. So, why is equity important? I'm kind of going fast right now because I know you guys have been here. Do I have 2 hours for this?
You're talking to the wall.
Chad. Come on. And he's our nicest board member. So.
Okay. All right. I'll try to speed up a little bit. But it shows your credit worthiness. CFC gives discounts if your equity is over 40%, or 40% or over. I'll say that. The co-op I was at prior to joining CFC, I started their equity was 28%. When I left, it was 38%. So in 6 years, we were able to move the needle a little bit closer to the 40. We weren't quite there yet, but that's something that the board gave us that challenge because ours was so low that we needed to get it adjusted higher. So we took that challenge on. We made some changes. And we got almost there before I left. But it's something that the board needs to think about, a range, really, in equity. We want it between here and here. Not one number, because things happen year to year. You're going to miss it occasionally. So it shows you that you're credit worthy. It means you get more flexibility. It's like oxygen in your tank when you go scuba diving. You know, something... If you get lost while you're underwater, you got 80% or you got 50% oxygen, whatever, you can swim a little longer and find your way out. If you got 10%, it's going to be a little more painful. You better hurry. Storms happen. The windstorm past couple of nights. I'm surprised nothing. I'm impressed. Not right. Surprised. I'm impressed that nothing happened with that.
Zilch.
So why is the plan important? An equity management plan is an essential communication tool that reflects the cooperative strategic direction. Who you want to pay for what and when? How much equity do you want? How much is too much? How much is not enough? That's the board's call on this. Staff, this side of the room, it's like you're dueling over here. Staff is to set target margins necessary to achieve the desired equity range established by the board. So you guys establish a range. Staff manages to that range. Okay, there we go. Optimizes capital availability to finance plan investments. So if you've got equity, CFC's in the room, or the other banks are. I mean, we're okay. If you got 20% equity, we're probably a little more, anxious when we come to see you. Controls costs for the memberships. High equity, members are paying more, costs are more. So how does my co-op measure up? I've got, I didn't even get it back here. And Jonathan's probably seen this before. I pulled your Carretier report for Overton. Mm-hmm. And you guys, have y'all seen the Carretier report before? Melissa, I believe. Uh-huh. Okay, I don't know if they had or not. But this report gives you 145 different ratios from, I think in 2024, that's what I'm looking at. It includes 815 distribution co-ops. And it measures you by all kinds of categories, U.S. state, consumer size, all that stuff. And it's sourced from the Form 7. So how do we measure equity? And why do we? It's the most common way that a bank looks at your credit limit, your lending, and our lending limit for you. It's easy to understand, easy to calculate. It's total equity divided by total assets, and it's what we use. So it's ratio number 16. Equity, or total margins, and yours is, in 2024 at least, was 68.61% was your equity. So there's how you calculate it, assets and margins. Line 28 and line 35 on the liability side. Pretty simple, not hard to do. This is, it's kind of a down graph, or it's a gray graph. Sorry, I can't make any prettier than that. But this is your equity, Overton's equity compared to the U.S. U.S. is down here, the national median. And why do we use the median on all this stuff? What's the median?
The average of everybody?
No.
Mid-range?
It's the center. There you go. It's the middle. We don't use averages because there's some huge co-ops out there and there's some really bad co-ops out there. We pick the middle. We don't want to get it skewed too much. So, it's the middle. So, the middle for the U.S. is 44.51%. 50% of the nation's co-ops are between 36 and 54%. So that's kind of your quartiles, I would say, upper and lower quartile. And RUS requires 30%. So the median's 44.51. You guys are at 68.61. So you can tell you're quite a bit above. And you've grown it considerably since 2016. Yeah. It's gone up, quite a bit. That's where you're at right now, at least in 2024. So, distribution equity, which really, it doesn't affect you as much at all, honestly. Y'all don't change because this excludes allocations from everybody else. So, y'all don't get those allocations. So, we're not going to really talk about it because it's not important, but it's your core margins from your core business without allocations. So, It's the same. It's a better comparison for co-ops in the co-op world that do get these allocations. We back out all those allocations to get a real snapshot of where they're at, which you'll see the investments from other organizations or patronage capital. That number's subtracted. So again, you guys did not move the needle at all for y'all. So cost of each kind of capital. Equity, opportunity cost. Your members could use that money today for something else. if they had it. Interest cost, cost of debt, usually cheaper than equity. Spreads cost over the life of the asset, rather than paying for it all at once. So you got two kinds of equity. So this is, and this impressed me honestly. Look at your blended interest rate. Y'all just talked about it earlier. What was it? It's under 4%. 3.7? Yeah. And the U.S. is just a bit above y'all. So kudos to hitting the market just right on interest rates. They're not quite that low anymore. Just hate to burst your bubble. But they haven't dropped yet. Now, it depends if Trump gets his way or not. We'll see what happens. But so the source and uses of capital. So your sources of capital, your rates, financing, and your uses of capital, construction, your construction work plan, pretty big number every year. Operations, it takes some money to operate this facility. And debt service, that's what the capital is used for. So, how much equity does each co-op need strategically? Provide a level of capital needed at the lowest possible cost to our members. That's what we're trying to do. Maintain a level of financial strength and flexibility. You don't want too much equity because your current members are paying for everything. You don't want a lot of debt because then your flexibility is messed up. So it needs to be just right. So in everything I do, I mean, everything that CFC does that I talk about, there's co-ops that have, you know, like I said, high equity, and all of a sudden in 1 year it'll drop, you know, from 75% to 45% to under 40% sometimes. It all depends on why. We've got co-ops doing huge fiber projects. They're growing so fast and around the DFW area that they've got to build out so fast that they can't, I mean, it just, the margins don't come in as fast as they're building it out. So it's going to drop for a while. But as long as you understand the why and are good with the why, you're okay. So how much debt should we have, if any? So board decisions. First, desire to change the equity position. If the board has a desire to change the equity position, that's a driver. You're the driver for that. Utility plant growth. You guys, a little note card here. I don't even really need it. You've grown 14% at least in 2024 or 2023. What was it? 14.34% in total utility plant growth. That's a lot.
Not in customers, though.
No, not in customers. That's your. This is plant growth. It's this side. It's these guys here.
Yes, I think of growth.
No,
being our overall
these are your
demand
assets,
for energy.
Your assets in the ground. What you're building. What you're doing to harden the system, to make it better for the future.
A new 138 line.
Yeah.
Transformers that keeps wanting.
Exactly.
We're going to be more than 14%. I can tell you
that.
Oh
yeah. And it's interesting. I'm going to look at this in a minute, but it's interesting to see where you rank above all around. Relate to all the other co-ops in the country in certain categories, and I'll go through those here in a minute. Capital credit policy, not a big deal for y'all at all. Willingness to generate appropriate margins. What level of margins do you need to function at Overton?
I say
you set that at about 5 to 6 million.
That's
dollars. $5 to $6 million.
Oh, not pesos? Okay. But it's something that you need. I mean, how much is enough? That's the question. So, you got the three-legged stool, but you guys only have two legs, really. I'm X-ing out the capital credit policy and retiring capital credits. Y'all don't do that as a power district. And that's kind of new to me. I'm sorry. I'm not used to kicking a leg out of a stool. So you guys are balancing pretty evenly on two legs. So, drivers that impact equity levels. revenues, your rates. Y'all just had a rate increase last year. From what did it, what was it, what did it go to? What percentage increase, do you know?
In 2025, we had about a 21% increase.
Okay.
And then because of a new power contract, and then last year we had a very minimal increase.
Okay, okay. So 25%, that's pretty, that's a big chunk.
But we hadn't had a rate increase in 13 years.
That's why you got 25%.
And exactly. Unfortunately, our energy rate went way out, though.
And you guys are still here.
Our energy rate's doubled.
That's even more amazing.
I haven't had an election yet.
Okay. Okay, sorry about that. Wow, 25%, y'all are still on the wall. That's impressive. So, you get it from your rates. And that's why it's important that at least every, probably 3 years, have your rates reviewed by us or somebody else. We do it for free. You know, not a big deal. But have someone look at them. That way you're not going for 2 decades. And all of a sudden.
But we had you guys come in and you recommended a rate decrease 3 years ago.
Well, what was going on then?
We were making $12 million in margin.
Why?
We had a wonderful power purchase.
We had a power purchase.
That's what did it, huh?
Yeah.
But when it expired.
Yeah. And we said, no, we're going to make the money.
Yeah.
Because we know hard times are coming.
You want a coupon at the end of that purchase power contract, huh?
Yeah.
That's rough. So you got your variable expenses. What you guys are really good at. I mean, if you look at your care TAs, your expenses, your controllable expenses, are.
We pride ourselves on
okay.
that, Kirk.
Do you? Because
yes,
I'm
absolutely.
Like, wow. Oh my. Wow,
you could say that again in front of the board. Like,
you need to pay
remind them.
10% increase across the board.
No.
I'm sorry.
No. Okay. Then there goes our variable expenses.
Okay, well,
just say
okay.
We control our costs
job.
Very well.
Allocations received, you don't get those. Other income and losses, sometimes I don't know if you have anything that comes in that you really can't control. I mean, sometimes, I know. We sold our trucks. We sold stuff on eBay, you know, old bucket trucks. So, you know, that's the other income our co-op had occasionally. We'd sell stuff. Balance sheet, the growth of your utility plant impacts your equity considerably. Other property investments, if you had to buy, you know, lands for your substation, that would increase your
warehouse.
Your assets or yeah warehouse exactly another warehouse
someday
current and accrued assets that impacts your balance sheet retirement policy again y'all don't retire things around here so that doesn't apply
just people and trucks that's the only thing we retire
so margins members account for nearly all of your margins here I would say 99.9%. So, revenue is generated in components of electric rates. Your fixed system charge, your variable rate, and your pass-through, your PCA. I'm not sure what you call the fuel adjustment if you do that here
we
or
don't.
Not.
We don't.
You know? You just eat it and go. Okay. Well, and we didn't. I played with the PCA for many years.
Yeah.
So that's your source of cash, which increases equity. Now, look at this. Ratio of 48. Operating margins per consumer. The rest of the country is about 100 and what? This is, I'm going to look at my cheat sheet. I didn't write that number down. So, 48. You guys operate at $585 in 2024. Out of 815 co-ops, you were number 19. Now, it's always good to be high on this number. Out of 815 co-ops, is it good to be number one on everything?
No.
No. It's not good to be number 815 either. You don't want to be on the extremes. Oops. I went too far. So, per consumer, you guys are doing very well. Or I would say, when I say consumer, that's per meter, honestly. It's not per member. It's per per meter. So that's kind of misleading a bit. So you guys are making...
Well, actually, the big change took place. And when we redid our rates, those numbers have dropped dramatically. We were making about 10 or 12 million a year in margin. Now we're down around 5. And last year we were even lower than that. We were only about 4, I think. Yeah. We'll be about 5 or 6 this year. So the chart is a little skewed because you didn't have the latest numbers that generated or our projections for this year.
Right. I'm going off last year's guarantee right now on most of this. So anyway, you're well above the rest of the country in margins per consumer.
When the number on the left, though, was that how much per customer could have been? $300 or $400 or $500?
Across the country in 2024, the average was median was $87 per meter.
Per meter. Okay, so we could take how much we're...
Y'all are at $585 per meter.
A margin.
Once all the everything's taken out, all the expenses, $585.
Yeah, not today.
Not today. It's about half of that.
Okay.
Seriously, isn't it? About?
Probably so.
It's drastically reduced.
It's reduced some quite a bit. So just that's where you were in 2024. I'm sorry, I'm not.
Yeah, that's no, that's okay.
That was back in the good times.
We were all smiling.
That was prior CEO.
Okay. Yeah, we had a different CEO.
Things change. It's good. So here, I mean, this is, y'all know this. Everybody, I mean, it's your statement of operations. You take your revenue minus cost of service minus operating margins, plus all the other stuff, get your net margins, and it closes out to equity every year. That's what the auditors are looking at right now. Mm-hmm. They're making sure all these entries are correct, so your margins are correct, so your balance sheet's correct, so everything looks good. So that's your source of equity. That's how it works on the balance sheet, or how it gets there. Now, this is something that, return on equity, ratio number 27. This is a three-legged stool as well. I'm not going to really go through it, but what can a cooperative do to change or increase or decrease its margins? You guys really either stop spending or raise rates. Mm-hmm. So I want to X that out too. This is, you don't retire capital credits, not a big deal. Utility plant. This is one that we're going to talk about a little bit because the growth you guys have embraced, have happened here over the past, at least in 2024, and I know it's going to happen again in 25, your utility plant is going to grow considerably. Plant additions, ratio 116. Like I said, y'all have grown over 14% from 23 to 24 last year. That's a use of cash. Either internal, members pay for it, or external through debt. So an increase in asset base reduces equity percentage. As your assets go up, equity drops. Not too hard to understand that. So the math, for every 1% added to plant, 1% must be added to your margins or to equity to maintain the constant equity level. Mm-hmm. So construction work plan, new members increase usage, normal plant replacements, hardening the plant, expanding it, that's going to decrease your equity. So here's the equation, assets equal liabilities, or assets equal equity plus liabilities. So what a business owns and invests in are the assets. Ownership interest of the business by your members plus your liabilities, what you owe to your creditors or lenders. Asset percentage growth equals equity percentage growth. It must grow at the same rate. So here's a slide that we had. If you grow $10 million or 5% in plant, you've got to grow equity by 5% as well to keep it flat. That's just to keep it flat.
But if we have too high of equity, we don't have to do that.
No, you can borrow more and
have
less margins. Mm-hmm.
you can borrow more and have less margins, or you can have no margins and pay for it in 1 year. You know, it's kind of, or you can...
We cannot do that.
I'm joking.
We cannot do that.
You have 5 million. You know what? If I had 5 million in margins in my co-op, man, they would shoot me. I remember the first year I was there, I think we had about $200,000 in margins. You know, we wanted to keep it under $500,000. Because what happens? You got to retire those. We had to retire those eventually.
You send them back, yeah.
Yeah, a big year, you're like, oh my goodness, we got a $5 million margins, we've got to retire that in 10 years. So you got to, that's always in the back of your mind at a different kind of co-op. So, again, here's ratio number 3, your plant. And this is in 2024. Y'all grew to, I think, what, 100 and, I thought it was 191. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, just about that. Yeah. Right, we're close.
Shoot. What did I do?
I think it's 191.234.
Oh, you went to sleep. I put the computer, I put that to sleep.
He held down the button.
My goodness. Okay, here we go. So that's your growth in dollars up there. Here's your annual growth in total utility plant. So rest of the country, it's just under 5%. Y'all are just about 15% in 24. So you're blowing the socks off the rest of the U.S. in growth right now.
Hmm? Well, so, because we have large transmission jobs that we're doing that are costly, yeah, that we've been planning.
But why are you doing those? That's the question. Why?
For system reliability.
Exactly. There's always the why in this. Mm-hmm. So
we see some utilities that have no growth in their plant. Because they require that their customers pay for a portion of it. They don't have the money to pay for the rest, and so they're not growing. We are.
Are we done, Bob? I'm sorry.
Slowly, though. Yeah. We are. It's not dramatic. Right. Increase, but yeah, it's growing.
Okay. 5%. So, here, like I said, I'm not here to convince you where it should be. The goal is to help you understand what it is and how to use the CARE TAs to recognize and the importance of a smart equity policy. So your target equity will be depend on a range of factors. The current equity level, which yours is pretty high, 68% right now, honestly, compared to everybody else. Current and future growth, where do you anticipate the co-op to be in 3 to 5 years? Where do you want it to be? Rate and regulatory environment. Are your rates competitive? Member sentiment. It's also a big one. You know, another 25% rate increase, you'll be, I'll be talking to maybe some other people next couple of years.
Well, that's a big one for us.
Yeah.
The member percent, how yeah. we affect our members.
Yeah, it's huge. Who's, who's paying for what when? So, mm-hmm. capital credit policy doesn't matter. So, too high? If your equity's too high, you're a takeover target. In most instances, normally, you guys probably not.
Well, it's for elections.
Yeah. You're a takeover. You're a takeover target. Sorry.
That's how they take.
This side of the room's takeover target.
They take us out. That's
right. And it also impacts your rates. Your rates are higher than they should be. Too low? It's harder to access capital. So you got to balance those two out. I can send you if you'd like an equity management guide as well to go through it. But here's, I'm going to get this last, this is my last slide. Then I'm going to actually use the flip chart for a minute. So, here are the equity ranges, and sorry, you're lumped in with California on the CARE TA report. California and Nevada are 56.61% equity for 2024. The U.S. median is 44.51, the highest quartile, which is right here, upper quartile, it's about 54.47. The lowest quartile, which you want to kind of stay between the quartiles, really, or somewhere. If you're outside, if you're down here, your equity is probably a little too low. And if you're up here, it's probably a little too high, just statistically speaking, based on everybody else. So that's what this tells you. So what I'm going to do now, well, let's go through this. What's your long-term goals? Strategic planning, what risk does the system face now and in the future? What are you building for? Where is the system's level relative to others? That's the quartiles we just talked about in your equity. And in terms of growth, what do you guys need here at Overton? What's that look like in the future? Are our margins requirements reasonable? Maybe, maybe not. Retail rate environment. So, I'm going to kind of walk, or at least talk you through. Can I get a drink of water real quick? How much time we got? It's 5 o'clock, isn't it?
It's okay.
I'll pay for pizza.
At least 2 minutes.
At least 2 minutes? Okay. So, let's do this real quick. As far as, I've highlighted a few things here. You guys are about 20 meters per mile of line. Pretty dense system, honestly.
It's actually skewed because of...
Oh, is it?
It? Because of the way our service territory is laid out. That our main population, we have 15,000 of our 19,000 meters are in the city of Mesquite.
Right here, huh?
Or in Bunkerville, so it's close. And then the remaining is far fewer per mile of line.
Desert land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, I can't, that's right. I drove through the desert land. I've worked in the desert land. Ours was about, I think we had 3 to 4 meters per mile of line at the co-op I was at. But we had huge, huge service area and a seaboard plant. A couple of plants that helped with our margins. So, of the rest of the country, as far as you guys, you're 68.61%, 24. Rest of the country is 44.5. Out of 815 co-ops, you're number 87. So you're in the top 10% on that. Let's go through this real quick. Total operating revenue. I mean, your rates are about 11 cents as far as 2024 mm-hmm. goes. Where they were. That was 640 out of 815, so you're not the high. You're kind of toward the bottom in that regard. Mm-hmm. Bottom middle, I would say, somewhere in there. Let's do this real quick. Operating margins, we already talked about that. Operating margins, you're about a little over 2 cents. Is what you close to the books in 2024. Rest of them were half a penny. Not even a penny. So you're number four. You were number 14 out of 815. I'd say the top 0.01% of the country, mm-hmm. you know, as far as margins go. So your margins are solid. Not a big worry there at all. But you're pretty, which reflects. You do control your expenses. That's huge, but also, I guess coming from the world of co-ops, where $200,000 to $500,000 was where you wanted to be, $5 million was oh my goodness, we closed too much out to the books. So, so let's do this real quick. Ratio number 27. Here's my note card. I can barely read it. Ratio 20, which is rate of return on equity. I'll use the red. No, this one. Let's not be red. Let's go black. So your ROR in 2024 was 9.82%.
It's about half of that right now. Because our rate change.
Okay.
And our power contract boost up.
So it's about right? half. Is it half that now?
I don't know.
I wouldn't. Yeah. You pick 1 month.
Oh no, it's not 1 month. We actually the difference.
Okay.
We cut.
But we're not talking about the margins. We're talking about rate of return on equity. So this is a different.
Yeah, it's not.
But that's still going to drop.
This is the rest of the country's at 5.79%. On the ROR. So, this is how much your members are paying for you to use their money, basically.
9 cents, 9%.
9%. 9% for every dollar that, you know, that's what they're having to eat, they're having to pay. That's something that they could possibly spend on something else. So, your line loss, and I'm not an engineer, so I do simple math. Line loss was 5.56%, which is pretty good, honestly. The rest of the country is about 4.35%. That's what that is. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you needed to borrow some money or wanted to borrow money, let's keep it simple, $10 million. How much of an increase in rates would it take to pay for that in 1 year? Everything else being even. I've got the number on the back of this tar. I did the math.
Very good.
Yeah. So, if you wanted to borrow the money, or not borrow, but pay for it, have the members pay for it, and a $10 million plan improvement project, it could take a 20% rate increase to do that.
If we wanted to pay for it just out of...
Yeah, out of your pocket, out of the members' pockets.
Okay.
Now, if you wanted to do the same thing, and I called the RVP today just to make sure, I'm going to give you a high number. If you borrow $10 million at 7% over 30 years, we're not going to lend you at 7%, what you'd probably do is do like a 30-year loan with a 2 to 3 year repricing right now, because the rates are much lower, about 5.1%, 5.2%, somewhere in there. But at 7% interest, you would pay $800,000 a year, which would mean your rates would have to increase 2%. So that's kind of the simple math on $10 million. If your members paid for it, it's a 20% rate increase. If you amortize over time, it's 2%. It's coming from somewhere. So if you borrowed the $10 million, your equity would drop to 65% versus 68%. I mean, it wouldn't drop a whole lot. If you borrowed, with $40 million, your equity would drop it to 57%. So still well above.
We're still in the upper quartile.
Yeah, you're still.
At 49.
You're still head and shoulders above.
And I think we saw that. We borrowed $22 million. We dropped from 70% to 62%. But we're back to 68%.
Yeah.
Jonathan's going to give you those numbers tonight.
Ooh. It's because your margins are great. I mean, really. If I had $5 million to play with every year, I wouldn't sweat it at all.
But so, we don't play with it. We invest it into our all of that goes back into infrastructure.
I know. It's one of those things I'm not threading the needle this year. And I feel like I'm always threading the needle. But let's just talk about line loss. So if you you had 5.56% in line loss, what you wanted to do is harden your system, make it probably more efficient. Are y'all looking at building substations too as well with this? So a 1% decrease in line loss would save you $560,000 a year in just money that's going out the door because it's not where it should be. But 2% increase would save you $1 million, a little over $1 million a year. But it's hard to get. Once you get down to 4%, somewhere 3 to 4, it's like you're spending money. It's hard to get back because it's so efficient already. But if you can get 1 or 2% improvement in your line loss, it more than pays for the system improvement in the loan. But the big thing is, who pays for what when? That's really, here's the bottom line. The reason I'm doing the job I'm doing is because my parents are 78 and 79 years old. I live about 2 hours away from them. I go there every other weekend. We've got 3 houses. I'll stay in one of them for the weekend. But if my parents had to pay for everything up front, they're not going to live to see. They're not going to see that. Mm-hmm. And that's the big thing about paying with members' margins or borrowing money. It matches everything up evenly if it's done right. Otherwise, My folks are paying for it, and they're going to live in 3 to 5 years probably and never see the benefit. So that's my closing statement for this. And thanks for the easel and pad. I scribbled on it just because I thought I could, but you still can't read it. So
thank you, Kirk. Anyway, that was such good information. We appreciate it very much.
You're welcome.
So I guess, Kirk, my question to you is,
yeah,
how would you rate Overton Power then? We're an A, B, C. I consider it
A-plus.
An A-plus, you know.
And I mean, besides your comments, everybody else.
I didn't mean Kobe. You
know? Right.
The tall blonde got me.
Okay, wrap it up, Mr. Chair. Rein him in.
I gotta start shaving my legs.
She's always nice to me. So
Richard Jones, that's enough.
Don't encourage.
Well, all right. I'll check with the tall
Let's wrap him
next
up.
Time I see
Let's
you.
Let's move on with item K. Leave you with possible parole and 5-year bar.
This I am going to turn over to Jonathan.
All right, in August, I'm going to read this for public record. Should I read it?
No.
Okay, moving on. We know what's going on here.
So, I'm sorry.
Okay, we're submitting a borrowing plan for $36 million over a 5-year period. So the background you all had. So to put things in perspective, we're going to look back in time. In 2020, from the period of 2020 to 2025, OPD grew $73 million in total assets. So we're projected to grow $70 million in total assets from now, 2026, until 2030. So this is what we're projected, and we need to fund that. So this right here is the list of our current projects, capital projects that we're doing, and also the future capital projects. We reprioritize these, and this is actually the list of what is currently ongoing in 26, and then what has been approved for 27, and some of those haven't been approved yet. But everything in 2026, the top, if we look at that 2026 balance, or I'm sorry, remaining balance column, the first 10 items in there are all ongoing projects. And then the bottom two are the two that were approved. Well, there are more, but those are two approved ones that are beginning in 2026.
So I didn't know we approved the cap bank, was it?
Yes, that was in the 2026 capital budget for $1.5 million.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is the cash outlay that we're going to do in 2026. Yeah. The total amount was more that we approved, but in 2026, this is the cash requirement. So these are cash requirements in the columns. So 2027, those are what were projected. So at the time when we did our capital project budget, This is the cash outlay. So we came up with after that, Randall and all of us as a management team, and determine how much cash we need in each year to accomplish these projects. And so down at the bottom, that's the total amount of cash that we need in each of these projects. So the total amount of projects from 2026 to 2030 is $44 million, and that's the breakout of when we need them. Is there any questions about these?
But there are some new projects here that we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
And borrowing $44 million will put us, what, about $75 million borrowed?
Yeah. Well,
77?
Yeah. And I'll get to that. Okay. So
let him get a little further down the road. Then we'll
We'll pay some down between then. And so $44 million is from now until 2030, the total amount of cash required to complete these projects or do these projects. So here, hopefully this makes sense. The top line is
if we look at the white line, total cost of projects, again, that's that total, the $44 million. So the next line, prior funds available for margins, $800,000 is what we had from 2025, roughly, to use from our margins to fund future 10-year capital projects. Mm-hmm. And then the next line is the anticipated margins that we'll have each year for the next 5 years to fund the capital 10-year capital projects. And then the next line is current available loan. So we already had $4 million, well, we had $9 million approved through CFC that we asked for approval. We used $5 million last year, and we still have $4 million we thought we needed. It's just, it was a timing thing. In December, those invoices didn't come through. It was carried over. The full $9 million we didn't use. We used the $5 million, and now we're using $4 million for this year. So that portion has already been approved, part of our old borrowing plan. And so what this plan is that we need to apply for an additional funding loan for the remainder. And so there's $44 million worth of projects, and the bottom line there, the net new borrowings, we're anticipating on needing $36 million to borrow for that in new borrowings. So basically half of that is coming from our, so $36 million is what we are going to, or requesting to borrow. $4 million is coming from our prior borrowings, and then $4 million is coming from our margins. On the chart in 2027, funds available from margins is negative 700, and then in 20 it jumps to 100. But aren't we going to have a rate change?
We're not going to have a rate change. So the difference.
We're going to get a new contract, aren't we?
Okay.
So I mean, it pretty much has to.
Yeah. So
this would be the same margin idea, right? The
yeah.
same approximate. The 5% margin.
So I'm just going to interject really quick and say, so when we talk about the funds that are available for those, that is, we say we're going to have $5.5 million in margins, and we're going to spend about $4.5 million on capital projects. So anything above that $1 million, we get to put towards the reliability plan. When Jonathan went through and looked at this, there are some years that we don't have anticipated that we're going to spend all that. We would have $1.8 million left that we could invest in reliability plans. But on other years, we already have more of that money spent, and that's why you see that it's only $500,000 that's available. So it's a little bit confusing. And what Jonathan says is, in 2028, we know we're going to have a new power contract. We will likely have new rates, but we're still anticipating that the board is going to still say at the end of this, we should have about $5.5 million in margins. Regardless of what our power cost is, you as the rate setting body are going to set our rates to ensure that our margins are equitable.
Gotcha. Except for 2027, though.
And that was because
it's $700,000 in the hole.
Because we already have more spending in that month planned. Now, some of that was that we kicked jobs down the road, but it's that if you look at 2027, we have more projects planned for that.
And it's not that we're $700,000 in the hole overall. It's that in that year we have the annual capital projects that we're doing, and then the debt service that we have in 2027 is higher than it is in 2028. So, So the available cash from
drops down because you have to pay more interest.
Yeah.
Or more payments.
Well, yeah.
Payments and interest and everything.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
So this here's a comparison. So if we look at in 5 years our long-term debt, so the column on the left is the light blue column is our current. We'll say pre-2025 debt. So that was what we had before
42.
We borrowed the $5 million. And if we went through the next 5 years and
continue to pay all that off, didn't borrow anymore. The light blue column is the where we'd be on our balances. And then the dark blue one on the right is if we actually took the as outlined here and increased our debt. If we took those draws every year, that's where our debt would be at 2023. So that's our balances. So I didn't do all the how much we were going to pay down each year and how much
yeah.
we were going to do in this. It just, that's the year-end balances of the debt.
So it picks up the current debt and then adds new debt.
Yes.
Yeah, from 47.
But it doesn't take into account how much we're going to pay off in 2028?
It does.
Yeah, it does show that because we're very little we're paying off.
Well, it's just a net number. The 59 yeah. is a net number at the end of 2028 because we're going to borrow new loans mm-hmm. in 26, 27, and 28.
Correct.
So that would be our total debt in 2030, at the end of 2030. And then, yes, that seems like a lot. And let's go to, and I'm sorry, my draft.
Interferes with the title, huh?
Yeah. Sorry, that. So we're gonna. This is the asset to equity ratio. So if we look at our blue column, this is gonna be our anticipated total asset value each year. So right now in 2025, we ended at one. It shows 1,125, but 191. I guess those should be the end of year. 191 million, and so. 216 is where we're anticipating to be in 26, and then that continued growth all the way to 2030. So 2030, we're...
How do we spend 40 million, 70 million in assets?
Because 40 million is just for the 10-year.
Yeah, but I mean...
10-year, and so we're also spending around 4.5 million in annual capital assets. Capital projects, those are not included in this. We're not, this is just for the borrowing plan.
Yeah, no, I understand, but if you borrow 44 million and your assets go up 70, how does that work? Because we're building something, it costs, that's what it's worth. If it costs 10 million to build it, it's 10 million.
Right.
With 10, how does our assets go up
so,
30 more million?
But you're using margin.
Yeah.
Margin.
So the other
the margins were real small.
The other portion is the margins, and then our capital, our annual capital project.
Okay.
Our annual capital project that we do is 4.5 million. So 4.5 million times 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's 20, 22, 23 million.
30.
And then we have our margins that increase our assets.
And that's
well.
What you're talking about. Before.
Yeah. So yeah, those are really good questions. So 261 million is what we're anticipating to have a net asset value as in 26 or 2030. So at the top there, our ratios are at the end of 25, we're at 69 asset to equity ratio, 69%, and then if we go there, 64, 63, 63, 62, and 61. So even if we are at a 70.5 million, and that's what we're looking at now. We're still in above 60% in our asset to equity ratio. And this, and as a reminder, this is to submit a borrowing plan to CFC and apply for the loan. All the borrowings have to be approved from you all before we do them, and this is just approval of the submit the loan application.
So let's talk about that so that I want to make sure that you understand this very clearly. We came to you and said we needed to borrow $9 million. We had approval for, I believe, don't quote me, I believe it was 35 million, and we had, okay, and we had borrowed approximately 25 million, so, or 26 million. We still had 9 million left available that we could draw on that prior approval. From that, we've taken $5 million. We also talked to you about the fact that we would need an additional $9 million in 2026. When Jonathan went to apply for that, CFC doesn't want us to nickel and dime them and say, we need $9 million here and $4 million there and $5 million. They said, what's your growth plan for the next 5 years? What's your construction plan? To give them an idea. We did the exact same thing last time. We said we were going to borrow do $55 million in projects, and we were going to borrow $35 million. And we took draws from that the board approved. Jonathan's doing that exact same plan. He's saying, in the next 5 years, we believe we're going to add $44 million to our plant. We're going to need to borrow $36 million of that. He applies for that. The CFC, we assume, if Kirk does his job right, is going to approve us.
No, and you don't, I mean, it's like almost a, it's a 5 year, we set aside for you guys this amount of money. Mm-hmm. Interest doesn't start accruing at all.
But we don't borrow it. We're not until locked to borrowing it until you approve
exactly.
It.
Exactly. See, that's what I'm concerned about, is that we say, oh, yeah, this looks pretty good. It's approved. No, it's not approved. It's a plan that we're looking at, and we understand it, and we approve each year's expenditure, each project. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I don't want to approve $38 million.
So we're not asking you to approve the specific projects in 27, 28, 29, or 30. Those will come from the capital budget.
Okay,
what we're asking you to approve is a borrowing plan that Jonathan submits to and gets approval from CFC, so that then that money is already approved. We have that $36 million.
That much money, maybe.
You don't have to.
It's not being borrowed.
Because that's what I'm concerned about, is you're committing to them. You're writing them a letter saying, we're going to borrow $35 million or something. I don't borrow
it. If after what, 5 years?
Well, that's true. I hadn't thought of that. Okay.
But, Mike, this is the exact situation that we did back in 2022. The board approved for borrowing $35 million.
We approved it.
But we never drew any of that borrowing without coming to the board for approval. The exact situation will happen here. We get approved to borrow $35 million in a plan, but we don't actually draw any money until the board approves it for each individual project. Nothing's changed.
Sure, because I don't want to be committed at this point, because we haven't studied some of the, I've even heard about some of these, about $10 million worth of projects here, mm-hmm. and that some of them may be postponed, and mm-hmm. depending on our finances.
But we, as a staff, have to make a plan of where we're going in the next 5 years.
Where we can go.
And it's of course going to be fluid, because new projects may come in. Some projects may not need to be done for 7 years. But we have to have a plan, and we have to put something forward.
That's fine.
Okay.
That's fine. No problem with that. I just say we approved all this spending. Sure,
but we're not approving any spending. We're approving a borrowing plan so that he can apply for the loan.
That sounds fine. Yeah, that's fine.
Is that a motion to approve?
Yeah.
Okay, I wrote it.
I'll make a motion that we... I'm looking at my motion here.
What?
Keep going.
The approval of the 5-year borrowing plan as presented.
Okay.
I'll second.
All right, we have a motion, we have a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
Thank you. That was a great presentation, Jonathan. I want to say, you know, I try not to promote that my staff is staying at the office until 9 o'clock at night, because I don't want to seem as though I'm encouraging that. But Jonathan has been seen at our office at 9 o'clock at night for a few nights last week, getting this all together in the midst of audit. And we changed it up and told him he didn't have to have this plan until March. And then we said, never mind, we're going to do it in February. And so
when does he get in the morning?
But he's leaving at 6 in the morning, and he's getting home about 10 o'clock at night. So I want to commend him and say Jonathan has worked incredibly hard on this. All right, Mr. Chair, we got one more.
Okay, L, let's look at presentation for the OPD Public Communication Plan discussion only.
All right. So as part of our strategic planning efforts, one of our goals was for communications. And so I've been working with Vernon on how exactly are we going to communicate and what are we going to communicate. Let's come up with a plan. And so Vernon is going to give you guys a great presentation of all of our communication ideas for 2026.
That'd be great.
Great equals quick.
You're our guy.
So, real quick, the communications plan, this isn't a brand new plan that we're rolling out. The plan's been around for a while.
Yeah?
Okay. It's been around for a while, but we wanted to let you know that we have a coordinated plan, and that it adheres to the strategic planning goals that we've had. To create a plan, it's a good idea to set up some goals. And in the world of communications, it's really easy to get down in the weeds on goals and talk about, oh, how many clicks did we get? How many visitors did we get to our site? And those are important things. We should be tracking them, and we are. But it's also a good idea to zoom out a little bit and say, what are we trying to accomplish? And these are the things that we've talked about. Developing, nurturing positive relationships, building trust with our public, providing a reliable source of information. When they know that our information is reliable and they know where to get it, then it builds trust. And maybe most important, all of these things can lead to us, to a perception in the public of us being an ally with them or a member of the same community with them and not as an adversary. And I want to say one other thing. These are aimed at our public, but it also has a broader application. Because if we only accomplish these goals with the people in Virgin Valley and Moapa Valley, that's great. But if we can develop and nurture positive relationships, say, with the members, our representatives at the state legislature through this plan, then we've accomplished a bigger goal. If we can build trust with the members of our congressional delegation and their staff through this plan, then we've accomplished a bigger goal. If we can provide a reliable source of information to the Governor's Office of Energy and other agencies that might give us grant money and other funding, then we've accomplished a bigger goal. And that's really the larger target that we're going for here. To get those goals, to achieve those goals, there's no real good communication without being able to communicate truth. And so in order for us to have something truthful to communicate, we have to provide the service that we're promising to provide in our mission statement. Reliable service at a reasonable cost. We do a good job at that. The numbers say that. That's something we can trumpet to the world, but only if we do it. Providing top-notch customer service, customer engagement, a priority across all departments. Christy's staff, she does a great job. Her staff does a great job at the front desk and at the phone to provide excellent customer service. But it goes even deeper than that, I think, to every interaction that we have with customers, whether it's our crews out in the field or whatever. Every one of those interactions our public communication, and if we're communicating the right things. And then our engagement with the community also is important. We've got a long list of things that Christy's pretty much everywhere in the community busy doing these things. And they're always a success, and they're great. It makes my job easier because I can say, oh, look at what we did at the last four schools. Our linemen showed up and they did these very positive things that, the social media lights up with people whose kids were in those schools and so on and so forth. So that's just one example. How do we get the information out, though, to people? And that's where the rubber hits the road for me, anyway.
What we need to do, word of mouth is a great way of getting information out. It's maybe the only way, really. But we need to kind of accentuate that word of mouth and accelerate it. And we do that by going where the word of mouth is happening. We've got to meet them where they are in an all-of-the-above approach. We do that through several different media here that I've highlighted and others. Our website, social media, capitalizing on local media outlets, email communications through our bills and e-bills, public meetings, organizations, and newsletters. And again, I'm going to focus on this too, because it's another part of my mission here, is that each one of those things can be leveraged as a touch point with our state and federal legislators, and we've been doing that, and with policymakers and grant agencies. We can take these things and send it out to them and say, hey, look at this, we've been doing this.
You have been doing that.
Absolutely, good. Yeah, for sure.
We'll be able to borrow less money because we're going to get grants.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Federal appropriations.
My goodness, I mean, no, I'm still here.
I'm taking my vote.
Disregard it, only a plan.
Still,
it's not approval.
Okay.
So this is really taking the word of mouth and corralling it, I guess. And I'm going to go into just real briefly detail some of these media and what we're doing and what we have done. Our website, I kind of term it as a permanent home base for public communication. It's sort of a repository of information that's needed. We have pretty good traffic on our website, and it's getting better. You can see the numbers there, the averages for the last year. Which is not bad, and even maybe more important is to see what people are doing on our website. Those most popular website content, they're paying bills, they're looking at job listings. I mean, that's probably a big percentage of the traffic is right there. They're looking for what our services are, what our policies are. They're looking for news items, which is on the front page. They're looking for key legislative issues, which are involved in those news items. They're looking for safety messaging and conservation tips and other how-tos and things like that. The only problem with the website is people don't always know what's on there and they don't know to look at it. So the question is, where do we go where there's conversation happening, people gathering, people having public discourse, to direct them over to the content on our website? And here's a few of those. Of course, social media is maybe one of the most useful ones right now. We were using three channels there. And you can see in 2025 our views on across all those channels, that red line is the trend. The blue line is actual views for each month. And it's a strong trend. And those views are pretty respectable, and hopefully will continue that trend. But
that,
maybe even
that,
more...
Is that across all the social media?
All three
media?
Of those, yes, correct.
Oh, okay, X, Facebook...
Really, the lion's share of our traffic is on Facebook.
You're still on Twitter, though, right? You're following us on X, Byron? You're our one Twitter follower.
I like it every time.
Perfect. Yeah, you know, I want to hear it.
I'm one of two people who gets that little heart.
Hit it twice for us.
Maybe more, even more instructive is to look at what the greatest hits of last year were. A help wanted for linemen. I mean, you can't. We advertise for those positions, but that's pretty good for viewing, and that all drives us. Those clicks, those views result in clicks that go to our website where that listing is, and people can apply. All right. There was a little interest story about the linemen advancing in their apprentice class toward the end of last year. That was the second one of the views. A lot of people and their friends and families that were interested in that. And again, that was a story, a longer form story on our website that people were clicking on the views and going to that. And then there were others, including a link towards the Steve newsletter.
We've made, there's, the board, especially Mike, has made some comments about that it's not all electronic, too. And so I think there's also important that we maximize other resources. We have local media outlets that are very willing to work with us and publish our content. Both the newspaper and the View On magazine have published content from us. That's free stuff, and that's a big deal. And they exercise a little trust in us to do that. It's also important, the advertising that we do that keeps a presence in those media, the newspaper, magazine, and other things. We're not competing in business with anybody, it's true. But at the same time, we're trying to build that alliance, right? An alliance with the community, be viewed as an ally. And those things, and I know the budget is set for advertising, and Christy manages that, and she keeps a pretty eagle eye on it, and she spreads that budget as far as she can, and I think it's money well spent in the community because people can see that we're involved both in supporting those media, which help us out too, and also in supporting the different programs that are out there. Our presence at public meetings, city council, town boards, I think is helpful. We're in front of the leaders of the community, and again, that builds an alliance with them and with the community. Our involvement with the schools, scholarship, Roundup for Education, again, building that perception of being an ally. And I was going to tell the story, the great story of the Chamber of Commerce and the Best of Mesquite. I think it was the Service to the Community nomination. Just the nomination is an indication to us that, you know, people are noticing what's going on. And that's number one, and number two, that we're involved in that civic organization, which is good. So I think these are important parts of it. Troublesome, right? Trying to figure out how to make it accessible, timely, relevant, at a reasonable cost, right? Try to make it the most for our dollar is this newsletter. And that last thing, the reasonable cost and some of the other requirements, timely also, kind of brought us over the last year to kind of bring it to an e-newsletter format, which is that one on the left. You've probably seen it. It gets posted to our website and goes out in e-billing, and allows some in-depth and longer form stories like board spotlights and general manager messages, employee achievements, those kind of things, which has been good. It's got good content in it. We can also link that from social media. We've done a lot of that. And through our website, so it goes from social media to the website. And it's also available in print if people want it, they can request it, we can send it out to them. We're proposing this year to change that to January and July. And Mike brought up a good point with this e-newsletter, and that is that we're missing an opportunity in the billing to send something out that people have in their hands. It puts it through their hands at least once, right? And that there's some value to that. So we've talked about and put a prototype together for a print piece. That's the one on the right there. That's a smaller piece that's 4 inches wide, about 9 inches high. Fits perfectly in to the envelope without folding, so you save a little money, quite a lot of money on folding costs and paper costs. And it's kind of meant for those who may not be on those social media channels and technology, smaller format. The content there is a more rapid fire general messaging. You can read it at a glance in just a couple of minutes. So you might get more readership that way rather than it just going in the trash. People can take a look at it. It's on both sides, so they can turn it over and look at the other side. And it also helps with being timely, because the way our billing goes, by the time the last billing cycle goes out, a lot of that news is kind of stale if it's time sensitive. So this can be a little less time sensitive and not quite drill so hard into current events. And we're proposing every 6 months on that, April and October. So we still have a quarterly newsletter, but it's going out
back and forth that way. And I think with all of that, that we are kind of hitting people where they are. We're trying to make the conversation happen that way. And that's my presentation on our communications plan. If you have any questions, happy to.
Thank you.
Yeah, I do. You're doing a good job with it. Yeah, that's a good job. But I'd also like to see a little more on the political side. Because I think the meetings that you're going to with the politicos are very, very important and will be way more important in the future as you build a relationship and can call them and say, hey, we have a problem with something. But I think that is a real important one. So
let's talk about that, just like what we have been doing in the last few months.
No, you reported on it.
So we did the social media piece on Facebook with Congressman Horsford and I. So we get the traction from there, but then Vernon sends that to the congressman and his staff, and then they took our piece and amplified it. And then we point them back to our website so that when we say, not only are we promoting you and our relationship with you, we're also saying, look at all of the other cool things that we're doing, and we're getting traction from that, those clicks on our website. And we're doing that with all, now we didn't take a picture with Toby and Jason yesterday, but we're doing that with all of those pieces because that's what is building that relationship. And what do politicians want from us? Photo opportunities.
I think you guys are doing a good job. I'd just like to see it part of the plan. Mm-hmm. Put in there, you know, so that all staff knows what we're doing, mm-hmm. the board knows exactly what we're doing. Because I don't want to lose those pieces. Mm-hmm. If they're not in the plan, sometimes you might mm-hmm. slip away. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily with you, but, you know, that should be a long-term project or commitment, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good point.
Perfect.
Anything else? All right, thank you.
That was excellent, Vernon. Thank you.
Just not very quick.
Yeah. Okay, any public comments? Any trustee comments? Yes, I would like to make one. I got a call from staff about my power bill being high. And the lady who called was so nice and so pleasant, offered me if I had trouble paying the bill, did the plan that you guys put in place, you know, where I could defer payments and stuff. Real professional, great job, and I think that's a wonderful community relation sort of thing. And sometimes they're just sitting there waiting for somebody to come in, and this gal was making calls, very, very pleasant, real pro too, real professional. Not she acted like a pro, but, you know, real nice, the kind of call you'd like to receive as opposed to all the ones for Medicare and getting.
Very good, thank you.
That was from our billing department, Jamie.
Well, they're terrific.
I would love to have some information, some education from you guys about how we lessen our line loss. Can I mention there from 5.56 to the 4.35? What would that take? I mean, it's worth some money if you're going to get mm-hmm. $500,000 a year. I mean, that adds up in the long run. Just if you guys can kind of educate us on what we're doing and what the projected result is for some of these actions we're doing, I'd like mm-hmm. to see that.
Yeah,
okay. That new line will help.
Absolutely.
The loading, because we're not.
Don't steal.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All fair thunder, Richard. This is Randall's show. Let him tell that.
It's all about loading. Power factor.
I suppose to think about blonde.
Okay, let's look at approval of next board meeting on March 25th.
Yes,
we moved it back
because you guys did that to accommodate my NRECA and then spring break. So we're a week late.
Okay. All right, looking for a motion for approval of our next board meeting, March 25th.
It's in Overton?
You know,
yes.
I approve it.
I knew somebody would. Do we have a second?
I'll second that
one. Okay. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Most excellent.
Any opposed?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We do have an executive session, and you have to stay.
Rouse the crowd.
Good to see you again.